Native American culture has helped shape many things, from the structure of the U.S. government to the foods we eat at the dinner table. But where Indians lack presence are newsrooms. I'm Brian Bull of the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho and a member of the Native American Journalists Association. Please go to NAJA.com and learn how you can join. We need people familiar with Native culture to tell our stories and set the record straight against stereotypes and misperceptions. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill today, Robert Gates, the Defense Secretary nominee, began his Senate confirmation hearing, and it is expected to conclude today. He admitted that the United States is not winning the Iraq War. Gates added that if the situation in Iraq is not stabilized within the next 2 years, it could lead to a regional conflict. The full Senate vote on his confirmation could take place by the end of the week. He is expected to be confirmed as Defense Secretary and could be sworn in by the middle of this month. Tomorrow, the long-awaited bipartisan Iraq Study Group report will be issued to the public. Today, President Bush received an in-person preview of the panel's recommendations on how to change the strategy in Iraq. White House spokesman Tony Snow said the commission would not be able to provide a, quote, magic bullet to resolve the situation quickly. The new incoming House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, along with other top Democrats, took part in a closed-door forum on Iraq today. Afterwards, she said she would not cut off funding for U.S. troops. However, she would set up a commission to look into the waste, fraud, and abuse associated with the Iraq War. The U.S. military estimates that in Iraq there are now 100,000 government contractors operating in the country. There are approximately 140,000 American troops currently there. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is now in favor of a regional conference on how to end the sectarian violence in his country. He previously opposed the idea because he didn't want neighboring countries to have a hand in Iraqi affairs. More than 40 Iraqis were killed in violence today that included shootings and several car bombings. One U.S. soldier was also killed today on patrol in Baghdad. Five others were wounded. In southern Iraq, an American soldier died in a vehicle accident. In Fiji, the military took control of the country. It's the fourth military coup in less than 2 decades. The country's prime minister is under house arrest and his home is surrounded by troops. Access to the popular video sharing website YouTube.com has been blocked in Iran. According to the group Reporters Without Borders, Iran has also blocked its citizens from having access to the New York Times webpage and the online encyclopedia Wikipedia. In a statement, the group said today that censorship in Iran is now the rule rather than the exception. And after weeks of failed efforts, the USS Intrepid has been freed from the mud outside New York City. You're listening to QNN.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distant guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
A British study has found that obese people may not need to diet, but should instead rely on exercise to reduce their blood pressure, cholesterol, and heart rate. New York City will become the first in the U.S. to ban trans fats at restaurants. Restaurants will have until July 2008 to remove the artery-clogging fats mostly used in cooking oil from their menus. The California milk processors, the people who are known for the Got Milk ads, are now trying to get people's attention with the scent of freshly baked cookies. Scented adhesives are being placed on the inside of bus shelters around San Francisco with the hopes of making people want a fresh glass of cold milk. The annual survey of the healthiest states in the U.S. conducted by a not-for-profit foundation has Minnesota as the healthiest for the fourth year in a row. Vermont was second. The lowest-ranked state was Louisiana, followed by Mississippi. Toll Brothers, the luxury home builder, reported a 44% drop in its quarterly profit, in part due to a record number of canceled contracts by new buyers. In November, announced layoffs in the U.S. were more than 76,000, according to an employment consulting company. That's an 11% increase from October, but down from a year ago. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $62.57 a barrel, and at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow was up 48 points at 12,331, NASDAQ up 4. There's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay, don't you stop America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. About 6 minutes after the hour on this Tuesday evening, East Coast time, and this is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Glad to have you around. Glad to be hanging out with you. And what a lovely little interesting little day it's been. The Robert Gates, the guy who was until recently the president or chancellor or almighty high craven of Texas A&M University, whatever it is they have at that militaristic little outfit. The new rummy replacement testified before the Senate today that we are not winning in Iraq. Now I don't think he actually said losing. He said we're not winning. Now, I would submit to you that that's one of those no middle ground sort of things. You're either winning or losing if, in fact, you view the military as just one great big football team with firearms. His is a very disturbing nomination, and I guess it's going to get through, because after all, the president deserves to have the nominee that he wants, and that's what we got told with Samuel Alito. Now, this guy's an old unreconstructed Reaganite CIA secret war in Central America death squad thug. You know, he and people like John Negroponte worked hand in hand, and now that death squads are roaming the streets of Baghdad and Ramadi and Najaf and Fallujah, we're gonna turn the entire Pentagon over to him. As the line from Alice's restaurant goes, didn't make me feel too good. But he did say, in response to the question, sir, do you think we're winning Iraq? No, I don't. To which the vast millions of us progressives, we and our millions, we liberals, we Democrats, we decent people, uttered a collective, duh! How many hundreds of thousands of dollars a year are we going to pay this unreconstructed Reaganite neocon to explain to America that we're not winning? You know, it's not exactly 4th and 41, but it's It's third and 18, and, you know, we're going to run a draw play. Because, after all, it's all just a big game. This isn't really a war. This isn't really an illegal invasion that George Bush started. It's a game. It's something we can win or lose. Well, I don't think we're winning, but I think if we pull out now, it'll leave the country in chaos. Dumbass, the country's in chaos because we're there. Yeah, I'm really, really, as the time goes on with this administration, I have less and less truck with stupidity. And yes, I've been arguing it, and I've come to, these people just aren't very smart. From Robert Gates to Donald Rumsfeld to Dick Cheney to George Bush to Condi Rice, the whole stinking gang, and the Congress creeps who couldn't be bothered to go to work more than 88 days out of 2 years, they're just dumb. No, that's not fair. They're not just dumb. They're mean and dumb. And then there's what went down yesterday in Florida. Did you hear this? Did you see this or hear this? I've got the audio. It's been yanked. It's a chunk I pulled out of a little NBC news report. If Agnes can get it ready to go, you'll hear the NBC news babbler. Dear leaders, dear daddy, bailout Bush, Bush 41, the guy who bailed out of his aircraft and consigned his crew to death somewhere near a rock in the South Pacific called Chichijima. Well, he went to it's one of those, I have come to the state of Florida legislature to praise my son Jebby, not to bury him. And dear leaders, dear daddy, got all choked up. This is just weird.
It's an emotional moment Monday for former President Bush. He broke down in tears as he spoke to lawmakers in Tallahassee about his son Jeb and how his son handled it when he lost a governor's race back in 1994.
True measure of a man is how you handle victory and also defeat. So in 94, Floridians chose to rehire the governor. But they took note of his defeated opponent, who showed not merely with words, but by his actions, what decency.
Dang, let's clap. He fries real good. I can do it. Now, wait a minute. Now, maybe we'll play that again here in a minute. For those of you old enough to remember the old Dean Martin celebrity roasts on NBC, you remember Foster Brooks? Old man Bush sounds like Foster Brooks. I'm not sure if he's crying or if he's loaded out of his out of his evil old head. Okay, hit it again, Agnes.
It's an emotional moment Monday for former President Bush. He broke down in tears as he spoke to lawmakers in Tallahassee about his son Jeb and how his son handled it when he lost a governor's race back in 1994.
True measure of a man is how you handle victory and also defeat. So in 94, Floridians chose to rehire the governor.
Rehire the governor?
But they took note of his defeated opponent, who showed not merely with words, but by his actions what decency.
By his actions? I can do it. I'm honest to God, I think he's been in some of that upscale rot gut that family drinks. I can do it. What's to get weepy about? Jeb has to give up power. They have term limits on the governor's office in Florida. That's all there is to it. And he gets weepy. You know what? I don't know. You're probably already there, miles ahead of me. I think he was delivering the valedictory for Jeb. But he was thinking about what a crying, rotten, damn shame of a job his older boy has done. You know, this was going to be the first father-son presidential team since John Adams and John Quincy Adams. And they're screw-ups. They're not very smart, and they're screw-ups. They have screwed up to the tune of 750,000 Iraqi civilians. They have screwed up to the tune of approaching 3,000, if not already there, American servicemen and women dead. They have screwed up to the tune of in excess of 20,000 profoundly wounded American servicemen and women. They have screwed up to the tune of a monstrous, monumental budget deficit when they were handed balanced books. I don't know. He sounded wasted to me. I mean, that's that old guy at the cast party back when I was at the University of Alabama who was wasted out of his mind. You know, you have beautiful feet. Those bunch of college kids. Daddy Bush was whacked out of his mind. You know, just a couple of cocktails before the speech, and I can do it. Don't take me off. I can do it. You were the good one. I love you, but that other one, your older brother, he's the bad one. I can do this. Clap for me some more. Oh, for the love of God. Oh, and just for the sake of fun, because after all, we do know I like to have fun. It's not prayer meeting edition time yet, but I gotta share a couple of things with you. Because those fine, upstanding Christianists over at, you know, those members of Al Christa over at the American Family Association, Donald Wildman, he has set up, and he's got emails, he's got mail servers and email servers and all kinds of stuff that have been funded by ignorant, not, you know, just generally not very bright human beings. And if you'll give them a throwaway email address that you don't care about, because they'll hit it with their shocked, breathless spam about every other day, things like Ford Motor Company selling cars to queers. But then they'll tell you, take action today. And so you go and you use that self same email address, you click on the little link, and there it is. They've got letters ready to go to your senators and your member of the House of Representatives. Whatever zip code you type in, and you can type in every zip code in the United States. If you want to, you can hit every member of Congress and every senator. And they've got a text prepared for you, because your average American Family Association member doesn't have enough common sense to be able to type their own letter complaining that, oh, I don't know. Let's see. Falafel Man Bill O'Reilly was complaining that Crate and Barrel won't say Merry Christmas. Damn them! Although it turns out Crate and Barrel has no such policy, and there's Bill O'Reilly attacking working. See, that's what you got to remember. At the base level of all of this war on Christmas, it's not a war on Christmas, by God. It is a war on working people. Whether it's Crate and Barrel or The Gap or Banana Republic or Old Navy or Ford Motor Company or Walmart. This bunch of weirdos are mad at Walmart. Walmart still supporting homosexuals! Ah! It's a war on working people. Because what the American Family Association hopes to do, of course, is to do enough economic damage to the business in question that they will harm their bottom line. Who gets punished when the bottom line gets harmed? It's not share prices that fall first. It's the guy who's hoping to get a little bit of overtime in this week so he can afford to get that bicycle for little Johnny that little Johnny's been talking about for 9 months. But because the upstanding religion industry fiends of the American Family Association have decided that they don't like the fact that they won't say Merry Damn Christmas, a bunch of working people get stiffed. So I had two AFA action alerts in my box today, and I like to be a good American Family Association member, and when Brother Donald Wildman calls on me, not just to pray for somebody, oh, I'll do that. But when it's time to be civic-minded and take action on behalf of the American Family Association, I'll do that too. Now, bear in mind, there's a humongous hospital corporation in the state of Nevada that has locked its nurses out and brought in scab nurses to care for people in the most extreme times of their lives. The American Family Association can't be bothered to stand up for people who can't stand on their own feet, who are flat on their backs in hospital beds. Can't do that. No, the American Family Association is angry about people using the Koran for taking an oath of office. So I got my action alert today. And oh, was it breathless. Dear God, I feared for the very essence of this republic, as Brother Wildman told us all, how American culture would fall to pieces just like Humpty Dumpty coming off the wall if Congressman-elect Keith Ellison was permitted to take his oath of office on the Koran. And he called upon me to write to my senators, to write, yea, verily, to my member of the House of Representatives, and tell them to sponsor a godly upstanding bill that will state that all incoming officers of the government shall take their oath of office on the Holy Bible. Now, Brother Wildman did not specify which Holy Bible he wanted, the King James, the New Revised Standardized Version, the Living Bible, the Way, the Truth, the Vulgate, the modern updated Vulgate with popcorn included, the unexpurgated King James Version with all the hinky-kinky stuff. He didn't say that. It just has to be a Bible. One of them motel room Gideon Bibles will do just fine. So I did. I wrote to Senator Rockefeller and Senator Byrd and my congressman, Nick Joe Rahal. Used the family address down in Alabama and the family zip code there to fire off some to Congressman Bud Cramer and Senator Jeff Sessions, who I'm sure would be more than happy to sponsor idiotic legislation like this, and Senator Richard Shelby, who couldn't even be counted on to stay in his own party. Turncoat bastard. And I wrote the following. Please be advised that the American Family Association has mounted this campaign to get uninformed, unintelligent people to complain about people taking the oath of office, quote-unquote, on something besides the Bible. This campaign shows the patent dirt-dumb ignorance of the American Family Association and their associated goobers and goons. Intelligent people know that the Constitution actually provides that there shall be no religious test for qualification to hold office. I'm sure that periodically you receive mass emailings from the freak corps that is the American Family Association. I urge and encourage you to ignore them as the ravings of the uninformed and unintelligent. America will not prosper or fail based upon some bizarre weirdo's interpretation of 3,000-year-old babblings of semi-nomadic goat herders. America will prosper or fail based upon her people's willingness to protect and defend the Constitution, and that doesn't require anyone's holy book. So that's what went out through the email system of the American Family Association and was guaranteed delivery. And in fact, receipt was acknowledged by a couple of different congressmen and senators' office. Thank you for writing to my office. That would be Senator Sessions and Senator Shelby. But I wasn't done. The work was not over. I had more godly undertakings to undertake. Because it's been a busy day being a member of God's army in the American Family Association. Because not only were they upset that Negro man, Keith Ellerson, was going to take his oath of office on a Koran. Really, go read the constitutional provision. No religious test or oath shall be a requirement for being a member of the government. You can read that for yourself, and it looks pretty plain language to me, but the theo-fascist goobers, well, you know, they have a hard time. Look at, I see the cat. Dick sees the cat. The cat sees Dick. Run, cat, run. They're just not very sharp. But I had more work to do because the American Family Association was also very hot and bothered about the Gap store and Banana Republic. Some people call it a sling blade. I call it a banana blade. The Banana Republic and Old Navy. And several other, Baby Gap, they's mad at Baby Gap. And Gap Body, you know, they sell brassieres at Gap Body. And they even show pictures of them on the internets. They was very upset at Chairman Fisher because Chairman Fisher won't say Merry Christmas, damn it! They want them, so they got them all. You walk in there, and no matter how, you can say hi, God bless you, Merry Christmas, and you won't get nothing but happy holidays. So I had work to do. They provided me a link whereby I could send an email message to Chairman Fisher there at the Gap. And I did. Yea, verily, sweet Lord Jesus, I did. I wrote as follows. Dear Chairman Fisher, the dim-witted goobers at the American Family Association don't seem intellectually capable of learning that censorship because they're censoring that. Yeah, that was the new thing. They're censoring Merry Christmas at the Gap. They're censoring it. The dim-witted goobers at the American Family Association don't seem intellectually capable of learning that censorship applies only to government action. While I love your stores and they're becoming quite ubiquitous, I don't think the Gap has taken over the federal government quite yet. I applaud your efforts to offer a diverse greeting modality during this time of year. With several holidays coinciding, your response is both appropriate and commendable. Meanwhile, don't let these addle-pated boobies from the American Family Association bother you. They don't have nearly the economic force they claim. Apart from that, getting the average AFA member out of Dollar General into the Gap is something I don't think even you want to do. I said boobies. After all, who needs a bunch of theo-fascist illiterates in your stores? If you refuse to bow to the pressure of these ignorant yawps, it will be my pleasure to continue buying my khakis at the Gap, Banana Republic, and Old Navy. Very truly yours. Happy holidays. Not Merry freaking Christmas. Happy holidays. Bob Kincaid. And see, there's a joy in doing this because, again, I don't know. If you just, it's so much fun. Every time they ask you to send a letter, you can use their email system, their tubes, their bandwidth, their email form fill-out function to send a note countering all the other goober mail that's being sent through their servers. And it will be received. I mean, Congressman Kramer and Senator Sessions have already acknowledged receipt of my mail. This is, you know, this is fighting fire with fire. Honey, take a shot of whiskey or something.
That's not nice.
That'll help.
That's not nice.
But no, you'll feel so. Oh, and by the way, if you'd like to just do this by telephone, the American Family Association has kindly provided us with the telephone number for Gap Incorporated. You know, you have to go through the usual corporate voicemail, hit this and dial that and press this button, marque el dos por español. The number is area code 650-952-4400. 650-952-4400. And you can call and just voice your support for the Gap saying happy holidays and thereby bringing into it Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, occasionally the end of Ramadan, and New Year's. I think I'll buy my corned beef and cabbage for New Year's dinner at the Gap this year, if only they'll sell it. But use that number. Let them know that we've got their backs. Because, you see, that's the reason that it's important to me, all kidding aside, that's the reason that it's important to me to use the American Family Association's own email servers to send out these emails that they, you know, I'm not doing anything illegal or wrong. They have asked me to do it. So use it so that you can counterbalance this. It is our silence in the face of this creepiness that allows this creepiness to continue. Only when the American Family Association has been proven to be the laughingstock that it is, and their lies about the economic power that they wield have been shown to be outright lies, will these dangerous theofascists go away. You know, it's not that you're defending Chairman Fisher. You're defending some 23-year-old girl's job she's trying to get through college. And she's working a 12-hour day, and she's folding pants, and she's dealing with consumers at Christmas time in the mall are just not a nice bunch. Stand up for her. She's got no union. She's got no benefits. She's got a boss that thinks that she's not working hard enough. And the manager has an Uber manager who thinks that she's not managing hard enough. And she's got a woman who obviously wears a size 26 going, "Honey, do you have this in a 12? It's not a good life. It's not an easy life. And on top of it all, she's got some right-wing, Bible-thumping, but-not-reading, polyester-clad freak walking in going, "Why won't you say Merry Christmas to me, God bless you?" Stand up for her. Stand up for her. Let's go to the phones. David is calling from Middle Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
Well, good evening, Bob. Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
What a great use of those WWW2, the ones with
it's a series of tubes,
punctuation painted on them. I'm liking that. Well, there's one little point of order that I met somewhere along the way. I only found this out today. I bet you've known it if you just chose not to include it as an arcane detail. This business of this fellow from Minnesota wanting to be sworn in on his Quran.
Yeah. An entirely symbolic act. Nobody gets sworn in on anything. They take a picture of a dude with his hand on a book.
Exactly right. The only guy with his hand on any sort of a book in the House of Representatives, Dewcroft, is the speaker gets sworn in. And then the speaker turns to the assembled crop of representatives and says,
"Y'all too?
Repeat after me. You will do this, you won't do that. Sit down and try to go to work, would you?" And then, as a symbolic item, to send back to the, you know, the home folks, because A, they don't put their hand on the book in the House of Representatives. There are no pictures allowed on the floor of the House of Representatives. House rule. So they all do this symbolic thing afterward. And there have been plenty of cases where Jewish folks have used Torahs. At one point in time, way, way back, Teddy Roosevelt was sworn in so hastily, they didn't use a book. They couldn't find one. The other guy was laying dead. They had to do something to have a president. So here we go. You know, it's a big deal. There's some idiot in Southern California writing a column.
Dennis Prager.
America will decide what book you use, you brown-skinned reader of that other scroll. Oh, brother.
Bad scroll. Kiss, bad scroll.
Kiss my aunt from Savannah.
Yeah. Yeah, again, no, living proof. It's all just a lie. And you know, the notice that I got from the American Family Association said, "Read this column from Dennis Prager, a Jew." As I live and breathe, read this column by Dennis Prager, a Jew.
You wouldn't make this stuff up if somebody asked you. You don't need to.
No, and see, that's another one of those things. If you will ask most people, certainly if you'll ask Abraham Foxman of the Anti-Defamation League or anybody of B'nai B'rith or most any people of the Jewish faith, they will tell you that they can, over the course of centuries, it's in the wisdom that's been passed down, there is a difference between when someone says, you know, he's Jewish, and when someone says, he's a Jew.
Oh, there is an intense difference.
And so, you know, even the racism, you know, Dennis Prager, a Jew who is going to hell, still wants him to take an oath on the Bible.
Dennis Prager, who is a Jew, and I will run through with the sword of the Lord, should I get the chance, prior to rising into the sky, right?
Mm-hmm.
You betcha.
Put to the sword. Praise Jesus.
Nice batch of folks. What a sweet, loving crowd, caring, sensitive Christians of the old.
Yeah, or not.
Gotta love them. You gotta love them. Well, I had to just add that little bit of fuel to the fire.
Well, but you know, my favorite part of the whole thing, David, is the dadgum constitutional provision.
That's even better.
And no religious test or oath shall be required for blah, 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 blah.
Being part of this secular government.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, I don't know if these right-wingers know it, and they don't know it, because, again, I'm coming back to my theme, dumber than dirt and meaner than sin, okay? It was a relative, it was a direct relative of George W. Bush, who took the oath of office as president on no book at all, because he felt it was demeaning. And that would be one Franklin Pierce. You do remember that hateful old beast's maiden name, right? Barbara Pierce.
Ooh.
Yeah, direct descendant of Franklin Pierce, President Franklin Pierce, who refused to have a Bible anywhere near his oath taking.
Well, 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 well. And nobody's going to talk about that one very loudly.
No. Maybe here, nowhere else.
Us maybe, not them, that's for sure.
But, you know, that's the scope of this idiocy. And you know, Bill O'Reilly making it up about the Crate and Barrel chain. You know, negatively, dadgummit, David, these are people's livelihoods. These people aren't supporting Christ or Christmas. They are attacking workers. They are doing the bidding of the anti-worker, anti-union, extreme right.
Any way they can spin a lie out of half-truths and have it rev up their base and have it look like to someone that doesn't spend a moment or two investigating like it's something that shouldn't happen. They create an illusion and then bang, they drop it and they go on to the next thing. It's just, you know, check this out. Saturday, I'm driving around. I was in the wide open spaces between Memphis and Nashville, Tennessee.
And them is some wide open spaces.
Oh, you betcha. And at any given moment, you can find, for 20 miles at a crack, you can find 7 or 8 1,000-watt AM radio stations. Every one of them was broadcasting a one-hour segment of information followed by 1 hour of caller response by one Dr. Richard Land.
Oh, no.
It was gorgeous.
The multimillionaire Southern Baptist minister who lives in the gated community somewhere south of Nashville?
Who believes to this day that George Bush is a godly man and acknowledges happily that certainly God talked to George. He talks to me, too. He is suddenly backing away from the fact that there's that fundamentalists are evangelical. He spent 30 full minutes. It took 3 radio stations to stick with him, but I did. He went into this very hair-splitting, make-it-up-as-he-went diatribe about religious fundamentalists were drastically different than religious evangelicals.
Yeah, they're the weird ones. Was that the gist of it?
They're the weird ones, not we evangelicals. We evangelicals will work with people we don't agree with. Why, I'm all in favor of Mr. Obama speaking about AIDS. Now, he shouldn't say a word in the house of God regarding, and then he had a laundry list that went into the second page, I'm sure. But, oh, no, he wanted to establish that he and everyone he was associated with was an evangelical, and they could think and, I quote, they could think and chew gum at the same time. Not like fundamentalists.
Prove it. I'm sorry. I'm calling BS on that one. I want to see him thinking and chewing gum at the same time. They're, you know, they're the Southern Baptists. They're going to lie.
I may have to go try to find his website and check, see if anybody could get to his Saturday broadcast regarding the difference between the fundamentalist and the evangelical.
Oh, that's precious. If you find it, you must send it on. Now, let me back up with you for a minute, David.
Please do.
You heard, I am certain, Blubbering Bush from yesterday in Florida, right?
I was looking at the MSNBC website. I saw it. I discount most of that website, but I saw that, and I just... No, it was a car wreck. I had to go look.
Yeah. Waiting for him to hold up the severed limb. Yeah, and there he was in the form of 41. Honest to God, I think there was cocktails before the speechifying. And I have proof, okay? The reason I'm backing up to this, we're gonna run the Bush audio again. You'll be able to hear it. And then, by virtue of the diligence, my God, you know, what an army of listeners I have. By virtue of the diligence of our good friend Billy Shears, we will side by side compare George H.W. Bush and Foster Brooks.
You mean the?
The Foster Brooks.
The Foster Brooks?
Yeah. So, you know, is that wonderful or what? You ready for this? Okay.
I'm sorry, he's listener of the night. Get that man a toaster.
Yep. So we'll need the volume up there. And first we have George H.W. Bush.
It's an emotional moment Monday for former President Bush. He broke down in tears as he spoke to lawmakers in Tallahassee about his son Jeb and how his son handled it when he lost a governor's race back in 1994.
True measure of a man is how you handle victory. And also defeat. So in 94, Floridians chose to rehire the governor.
Rehire the governor.
They took note of his defeated opponent, who showed not merely with words, but by his actions, what decency.
Okay. It gets
better every time I hear.
I know. Okay, so now, Foster Brooks.
I don't know you folks are interested or not, but
I mean, I'm kind of new in the business. There's a possibility you might want to know something about me. I used to be a professional football player. I played tight end.
Okay, stop it, Agnes. Okay, David.
Is there a Chinese premier I could roll up on?
Oh, it feels so good.
Oh, that's precious.
But I mean, if you hear the voice characterizations are identical.
They're absolutely perfect, and he is the man that threw up on the shoes of the Chinese premier.
The Japanese premier, yeah.
Was it Japanese?
Yeah, it was the Japanese.
My mistake.
Because they paid him to throw up on him.
I just can't wait for W41's next birthday because I want to pack the shoe. Come on, Pops, let's go skydiving. Just me and you. What do you think?
You first.
Yeah, you first. I'll be right behind you. Let me pack that shoe. I know all about that stuff.
The
Holiday Inn Express.
Yeah, got to get the plug in. You own shares, don't you?
Kind of.
But no, honest to God, we just did that. It is the same thing. You know, Foster Brooks was apparently a recovering alcoholic, and always worked stone cold. You can't do that drunk.
No, you cannot. You cannot do a 6 or 7 minute comedy bit loaded. I guarantee it. You may once, but it will ramble so badly. I don't care what anybody says, especially something like that.
So I'm thinking. I don't know. I'm sort of doing this CSI Tallahassee.
Well,
and I'm thinking there were a few cocktails before the valedictory. And it was, you know, bring me another one of those Courvoisier Manhattans. We call it a Kenny Bunkport.
Well, he is old, and you process alcohol differently at his age. And there could be a little medication. There could be the stress of knowing there was a Bush out of power. You know, that has a very adverse reaction for them. They do not like to be out of power. They really get angry about that. And they're distraught. So, and it's not a lock right now that Jimmy could be elected president any time in anybody's lifetime.
As long as they get a Democrat in the White House in 2008, Jimmy's options are open.
Oh, yeah, well.
That's, I know, scary. But, you know, running, the plan is they will run Jimmy against an incumbent Democrat who was handed the dear leader's Iraq war and has been unable to see the handwriting on the wall and pull the hell out and is sitting there talking about trying to find a way to exit with honor. And here comes Jimmy in 2012 and says, I'll bring us peace with honor, and I've got a secret plan to get us out of Iraq. Ever heard about the secret plan before, David?
Oh, yeah. Don't get me started. Yes, I have heard about the secret plan. Yes, I have.
I didn't even have to get the crystal ball out for any of that.
Well, that's what makes it so important to put enough pressure on the Republicans now and before the next election that they are forced to get those people out. And were a Democrat to be elected, and the troops still be there in any quantities at all, anything over 10,000 people, then within 90 days, they should be on the way out and deal with the consequences for 3 years and then reelect that Democrat. But you're right. Should the troops remain until after a Democrat is elected? And should that Democrat say, get cold feet and say, well, I don't know, maybe there's a way, what about, I'm afraid of this. I don't know about that reaction. And, you know, go to so damn many focus groups, they lose their nerve. And then, yeah, Jeb runs against it because I've got a secret plan. And sadly, with the aid of some deep old machines, we might fall for it as a nation.
Well, there is by no means, and you know, and that, you know, I guess I'm just I'm the official wet blanket, but by no means are we out of the woods.
Oh, the work is done. We're just that bad.
We haven't gotten there yet. We're standing in the on deck circle with the pine tar rag and knocking the dirt off the cleats.
No, if we think the House and the Senate, if we think that's a walk off home run, we're delusional. We're damn near as delusional as the Republicans. No, it's just, it's an opportunity to work harder. It's there are fewer barriers to the Democratic Party being given a chance, the way I think of it.
Well, all we got to do is keep the damn lights on and keep our eyes open.
And keep screaming at them.
Yeah, and remember, we have finally figured it out. We have exposed them. They are not geniuses. They are not smart. They're not evil schemers and plotters. I say it, and it's worth repeating. That's why I do it. These are, well, that wonderful line from Blazing Saddles. Simple people. People of the earth. You know, morons.
Maroons.
Yeah.
Used to love.
You know, what an ultra maroon. Yeah.
Well, I think they are kind of teeing off on each other quietly, for the most part behind closed doors. I mean, and they're also revealing themselves to be just as mean and just as stupid as you're speaking of. You know, and who was it? Was it Rummy that said the Iraqis need to pull their socks up? You know, it's kind of like, it's not our fault your country's a mess. It's your fault you haven't corrected.
Yeah, the Iraqis need to pull their socks up. Jesus, we burned the socks up. We burned the sock factory. We burned the fields that grew the cotton that went to the sock factory to make the socks for the Iraqis to pull up.
Precisely. And I thought it was very telling. One of the few genuinely intelligent remarks I've ever heard George W. Bush say. It's the morning after the election. And this question, that question, this question, that question. And somehow Karl Rove's name came up, and what do you think about the future of the Republican Party? I've forgotten the setup to it. But Bush said, and I remember this, it's one of those, I think when he was really, when he just said what he was thinking and it made sense to the rest of the world. Well, no, no, I was watching the election very closely. I'm not sure Rove was. And I thought to myself, well now, Carl may have an interesting lunch next time he drops by to chat with the press. I hope they're clawing each other. I hope they're clawing each other raw, and they should. I hope they form some circular firing squads. Well, let's leave a nice segment for some real callers. I'm going to get out of the way. I had to just jump in and swim around.
Well, I appreciate your freestyle.
Yep, had to splash a little water on the lifeguard.
Thanks, David.
See ya.
Later. And on to our good friend Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Well, hanging in there.
Yeah.
I'm a little sore after your performance. You had me laughing so hard.
Oh, good. But, you know, there was some seriousness in that, too, Susan. We have every right to use
Agnes is going to have me post. Agnes is going to send me the information. I'm going to put it up on the blog so everybody can do it.
All you got to do is go to AFA, it's American Family Association, or AFA.org or whatever. Just the website of the American Family Association, and use some crappy little email address that you'll never use again, and just sign up for action alerts.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to put it up there in case somebody, didn't hear the broadcast. The reason I'm calling, though, is did you see that post that your dear wife had me put up there about why I did not leave the United States in time?
No, I have not seen
it. It's a adaptation of the article, Why I Did Not Leave Nazi Germany in Time.
Oh.
Now, if you read it, it will scare you half to death. So I came up with, I was sitting in the production chat and with Agnes and John, and I happened to come up with an idea, and the more I thought about it, the better I like it. And besides that, we have a chance to all get warm. I propose that the corn people in the United States pack up our toys and move to the Caribbean. Off to and we establish Radio Free USA. Get ourselves a high-powered transmitter and proceed to blast programming back into the United States.
Oh, and just be pirate radio like they do, or like they used to do off the coast of the UK in the English Channel?
Get a 500,000 or a 1,000,000-watt transmitter and just have at it. What a rip.
I actually had a very dear friend who was one of the jocks on Laser 558 many, many years ago out in the English Channel. And they were rock stars in the UK with what they did.
And
it would be fun. I don't think we got the money, but it would be fun.
Well,
because we'd have to be supplied by, like, Venezuela or something.
Well, not necessarily. If you moved into one of these little Caribbean island nations that have a real, real low standard of living.
Yeah.
They're not exactly, you know, you keep your U.S. citizenship, you still have your money coming in, bam, your money goes a lot longer.
True enough. And it stays nice and warm there. And my darling Agnes, who has the metabolism of bless her, reptiles, it gets cold, she gets slow and sluggish, it warms up, and she begins to, you know, thrash about in the water and snap the heads off of small animals.
She's got something to do.
Including me.
It's coming.
But no, I mean the warm weather it would definitely be nice. But
you know,
the way our luck runs though, Susan, no sooner would we get there and get the tower up than Hurricane Oh My God would come blowing through. And
well, yes, there is, that is the drawback. You have to factor that in. But then again, the way things are going, what do you want to do? Put up with hurricanes? Put up with Gitmo?
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but they start torturing me, I'm going to up and die on them.
Just to piss them off.
You know, it's just going, whoop, I'm going, yelling over. But, and I personally think I like the name Radio Free USA.
Well, that it would certainly apply.
Yeah. It would be the only free media in the entire country. Because it's not in the country.
Exactly, and not subject to the FCC, and we could say booger if we wanted to, and not worry about L. Brent Bozell III and his army of activists for clean language in broadcast taking us to task. Yeah.
And that way you could go not only terrestrial, but go internet as well.
But you know, the cool thing is, as long as our series of tubes continues to work here, and that is certainly not guaranteed, Susan. But as long as it continues to work, we're sort of doing that.
Yeah.
Granted, you can't turn on the tabletop radio on your kitchen table yet and have this happen for you. But we're there.
Yeah.
And you know, the FCC does not have jurisdiction over this, and I can say booger. Sorry, that's just my handy little word. But no, you bring a topic to the fore that's very important as to why we do what we do, and we don't have to bow and scrape to a bunch of Republican right wing theocrats at the FCC. We can tell them to go piss up a rope, and I think I just did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the beauty of not fooling with the terrestrial radio model. This is the future.
Living 2 hours from an international border, although let's face it, Canada isn't all that welcoming anymore. I tend to think about things like this. But if you can, and I urge the listener, read that posting. It is thought-provoking is not a word I would use.
Well, I just had a look at it. Yeah, it is frightening.
Yeah, it's terrifying because basically what they did was they just switched terms, you know, for, you know, like Bush Cheney for Nazi Germany, and it's just no.
I used to play that cut and paste game with texts of speeches by George Bush.
Mm-hmm.
And I do a global search and replace in Microsoft Word or WordPerfect or whatever. And everywhere I found Muslim terrorists or some phrase like that, I would replace it with Christians
mm-hmm.
or religion industry. And you know what? The meaning didn't change.
No, it never does. That's what's scary. But
you know,
it's something to the idea is something to keep in mind. Because it may come down to, we may have to run.
Yeah, or maybe we, you know, I don't. I'll bet it'll be a hard damn job making me run away from this.
Well, if it's the choice between ending up in jail.
Oh, I'm not going.
Or whatever, you know, heading up into the hills and the hollers. Into the caves back there. I know West Virginia is real good for that. You can hide an army back there.
And from time to time, we have.
Yeah, I know. Some of my ancestors came from West Virginia.
Right.
You know, all of my Scots ancestors, you know, they hit West Virginia first.
Well, you know, we started out in the Tidewater region, and they kept fooling with us and kept fooling with us, and we kept moving west trying to get away from the people who wanted to tell us how to live our lives. And eventually, you know, some of us ran into the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah, that's just about it. Along the way, some of mine ended up being converted to Mormonism.
Well, you know, when they've got the gun to your head and they say, put on the sacred underwear or die, you know, you don't ask them whether it's BVD or jockey.
Fortunately, and what's really scary is those were the Scots, and generally... Scots are too hard-headed to do something like that.
Right, they've got to have a gun to their head.
It's either that or they actually believed it, not going, my word.
Well, you know, maybe this is a discussion for another day. Mormonism just sort of blows my mind.
The whole thing just blows my mind. I don't...
Well, I happen to be over, I'm a movie fan, so every now and then I wander by IMDb.com.
Oh, yeah, I love that.
Well, you know, they got message boards there. You know, there's an individual message board for every film you look up.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw some mention of Mel Gibson's Apocalypto.
That's one I'm not going to be watching.
I got to tell you, I'm tempted to have a look at it just because of my fascination with that culture. The artist's rendering of what the cities looked like when they had people in it would almost be worth the ticket price to me on a big screen. It's like seeing the big screen version of Minas Tirith in The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, you got a point.
But I probably won't spring the $8 because I won't go to any movie that I can't take the whole family to.
Yeah, provided, of course, that the artist was as good as the artist that worked on The Lord of the Rings.
Right, and the couple of trailers I've seen are pretty doggone impressive. But, no, my point, I looked at the message board for whatever this was, and... Someone whose handle was BYU Girl posted a query on Apocalypto to ask, is this movie developing the Mormon influence that proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Maya were descendants of the Nephites and the Lamites?
What? Oh, Lord.
Yeah, I know. It was one of those, you know, straw meat liquor bottle moments.
Yeah.
And you know, the thread was like 300 messages long of people going, sweetheart. but the thing is, and the reason I come around to this is what you talk about, what you said about how, you know, people bought into it that you wouldn't have expected to.
Uh-huh.
There was a vogue in early to... mid-19th century America, when the Western progress of the nation got to the point where they started seeing, well, for instance, the Serpent Mound and the Bird Mound in the upper Ohio Valley and the you know, up around Newark near Columbus, Ohio, and they got into the Mississippi and Tennessee watersheds, and they saw all these magnificent mounds. And because they were Westerners and because they were European stock, they were racists.
They said, no way the Indians could have done that.
Yeah, no way could anybody who actually lived here, it had to be. And what grew up around that, Susan, was this was done by the lost tribes of Israel.
Yep.
And that was in vogue long before Joseph Smith started his hokum. But Joseph Smith never had an original idea of his own either. And so he picked up on that, claimed that an angel named Moron...
No, actually, it was Moroni.
I know, it's Moron with an I. I, you know, just like Isaac Asimov, I, Robot, I, Moron. It was, you know, it's the plural of Moron.
Mm.
Morons, Moroni. But this angel named Moron told him that, you know, there were Lephites and nematodes and stuff, and that they had had a terrible, and they were the lost tribes of Israel. And just made all of this up, and, you know, I read the tablets with my sacred reading glasses.
Yeah, well, if they, you know, if they wanted the Salt Lake Basin, they, you know, they were more than welcome to it, since, you know, it was pretty much some of this, you know, only the Mormons would take it.
Well, but if anybody came through their land, they slaughtered them too. There was a group of, I think, 219 settlers from Tennessee passing through on their way to California. Brigham Young's people slaughtered them to the last man, woman, and child, and blamed it on the Indians.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this isn't speculation; it's fact.
Yeah, they missed the turnoff. From the
I knew I should have turned left at Albuquerque.
What?
I knew I should have turned left at Albuquerque. You know, Bugs Bunny, my hero.
No, actually, my hero is Marvin the Martian.
You humans make me very angry.
Yes.
Yes. Love Marvin.
Yes.
Well, Susan, good talking to you.
Well, if we ever set it, get the money and we can set it up someplace warm, we can proceed to just irrigate the British land.
Well, we'll set up a Southern Command, just like what Flush Flimball says he has.
Or a Western, you know, set it up in Baja or something like that.
Oh, that, you know, that could be nice. Cabo San Horn.
Yeah.
Do a little fishing on the beach, get behind the microphone. Yeah, I like the sound of that.
Yeah, I can go for that.
Maybe Costa Rica, I don't know.
Costa Rica's good, too.
Thanks, Susan. Have a wonderful night.
You, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, I did it again. I shot over the news. But, you know, I enjoy a conversation. We can go to the news now. Because we are indebted to no terrestrial radio station. We can do radio the way you want it here on the Horn. Jump in. Get involved with the program if you want. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4. Head on. Email to Bob at headonradio.com. Not my fault if you don't use your resource. We'll be back.
This is the Quality News Network. On Capitol Hill today, Defense Secretary nominee Robert Gates was confirmed unanimously by the Senate Armed Services Committee. He told senators the U.S. is not winning the Iraq War. He says if the situation is not stabilized within 2 years, a regional conflict may result. He refused to commit to a U.S. troop withdrawal. The full Senate vote on Gates' confirmation could take place by the end of the week. He is expected to be confirmed and would be sworn in by the middle of this month. In Iraq, more than 40 people were killed today in shootings and car bombings. One U.S. soldier was killed today on patrol in Baghdad. 5 others were wounded. Another American soldier died in a vehicle accident. In Washington today, incoming House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, along with other top Democrats, took part in a closed-door forum on Iraq. She says she would not cut off funding for U.S. troops there. However, she will set up a commission to look into the waste, fraud, and abuse associated with the war. At the Pentagon, officials estimate that in Iraq there are now 100,000 private government contractors. There are approximately 140,000 American troops. At the Pentagon, data says more than 40% of Army and Marine ground combat equipment is being used in the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Each year, $17 billion worth of equipment is worn out or destroyed. At military depots in America, there are large piles of equipment awaiting repairs. As a result, many units are rated unready for deployment. In Rhode Island, hackers have reportedly attacked the Naval War College's computer network. Investigators are trying to find out who is responsible as they assess the extent of the cyber break-in. Outside of New York City, the USS Intrepid has been freed from the mud. The ship, a military museum for a quarter century, was pulled out of the Hudson River today by a team of tugboats. House Republicans have put off a bill to open a large region of the Gulf of Mexico to oil and gas drilling. No reason was given for the decision. In Fiji, the military has control of the country in the fourth bloodless military coup in less than two decades. The head of the armed forces appeared on television to announce the military would be running the government. Fiji's prime minister was flown out of the country today. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business are next. It's 2.5 minutes past the hour.
Run for your lives. The lenders are coming. They're in the mailbox. They're overloading your email. They're on the phone. They won't be denied. The best rate, the biggest bargain, fewer points, too much information. Gold Coast Financial to the rescue. They can offload the overload and handcraft a loan that suits your needs. Are you on lender overload? Relief is just minutes away. Call Gold Coast Financial, 831-649-8757. 831-649-8757. Gold Coast Financial.
Hi, I'm Anthony, owner of the Duplication Connection, and I want to help you grow your business. At the Duplication Connection, we specialize in CD and DVD duplication in quantities from 1 to 1 million. If your company needs mass quantities of CDs or DVDs, you can now use us as one of your primary marketing tools. Thousands of our customers have depended on our fast turnaround and superior quality product for almost 20 years, and so will you. Please call us at 831-373-0493 or visit our website at www.duplicationconnection.com.
The head of an in-depth climate study announced today that the European Alps are going through the warmest temperature seen in more than 1,300 years. The Austrian scientist says he expects the climate to warm up even more in upcoming years. In November, announced layoffs in the U.S. were more than 76,500 people. That's an 11% increase from October. The Commerce Department reports U.S. orders in October for factory goods declined by 4.7%. That's the largest overall decrease in more than 6 years. Minnesota is the healthiest state in the union for the fourth year in a row. That's according to the annual survey by a leading not-for-profit foundation. Vermont is the second healthiest. The lowest-ranked state was Louisiana, followed by Mississippi. The iconic black Da Vinci dress that Audrey Hepburn wore in Breakfast at Tiffany's sold for just over $800,000 at a London Christie's auction. The proceeds will benefit a charity in India. Light sweet crude is trading at $62.43 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones was up 48 points at 12,331. The NASDAQ up 4 at 2452. The S&P 500 up 6 at 1414. Gold ended trading at $648.90 an ounce. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Annabelle Lund.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
If you saw the post for the show today, there at headonradionetwork.com, you know we've been looking forward to a conversation with essayist Charles Sullivan. Charlie is a fellow West Virginian and writes some amazing stuff, much of which has been read by others and passed on to me, including a couple of recent articles over at Information Clearinghouse, one of which is... among other sites, I might note, one of which was last week, Clueless Americans, and then more recently, an article concerning the NSA and computer security. Glad to have you aboard, Charlie. Welcome to the program. Glad you could find make time to call in and have a chat.
Okay, Bob. It's good to be with you.
Good to talk to you.
Well, I'm trying to regain my composure after that George Bush piece. It really got me kind of teary-eyed, you know, but I guess I've gathered myself, and you know, I'm ready to go on.
Yeah, at least slightly more composed than Daddy Bush was yesterday in Florida.
Wasn't that a piece of work?
You know, cheap cognac will work miracles.
It kind of reminded me of who was it? Jimmy Swaggart, I think. Remember that?
I have sinned against you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But Foster Brooks—that's a possibility.
Well, that was the first that when I heard it for the first time, I went, Jesus, I haven't heard anything like that since Foster Brooks, and you know, bang.
Well, you know, if by some chance Foster Brooks really is George Bush, that could explain a lot of things.
They have never been seen in the same room together, Charlie.
Ah.
See?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. tell folks who may not know a little bit about yourself outside of your writings, if you don't mind. Among other things, you're rather a darn fine photographer, I'm told.
Well, I do my best. I in recent years, I've worked as a furniture maker. I've had my own little shop for a while. I've worked in a few other shops, and you know, I enjoy working with my hands. And it's basically made-to-order custom furniture. That hasn't gone too well of late. You know, the market's fluctuated quite a bit, so I'm kind of tired of not having income. So I've moved on to some other things, and you know, I do a lot of outdoor photography, natural light photography, landscapes, and native plants and things like that, and the occasional portrait. But things have been pretty slow lately.
Well, you know, we've got I admire people who can do more than one thing and do more than one thing well, because I think that in you know, whether it's almost any calling whatsoever, there's a level of specialization in this society that I think is probably not healthy.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yes.
Yeah, I can change my earth
and...
Yeah, I can change the oil in my car. I can't pull the engine, but I can, however, you know, in addition to running my yap on the radio, I can go and cook a meal, or I can raise a garden, and we need to be more multifaceted than what we are.
Well, I think so, and you know, with the future looking the way it is, that might be more important than ever. You know, as really as a survival mechanism, you know, we may have to go back to growing our own foods and you know, becoming a community again. Wouldn't that be something?
Yeah, it would be. We joke a little bit about this program being a little bit like Friday evening on the front porch, because I'm old enough to remember when I was a little kid, it seemed like of an evening here in this very location where I am now. People would stop by to see my grandmother day in and day out of an evening, you know, on the way out the road, and they'd sit on the front porch and talk.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen anymore.
I remember those days as a child. You know, we used to do that, and you remember, you know, sitting down as a family and having a meal together and not rushing and chewing your food and actually talking to one another.
Right. So, you know, we're trying to do a little bit of that here with the horn, and I think that dialogue is also promoted through the places where your stuff is published. I've seen opednews.com. I've seen it at Information Clearinghouse. And again, I think you're trying to promote the idea of dialogue. So it's a natural that we would be having this conversation. Most recently, the two articles I mentioned, I'd like to start, if you don't mind, with your concept of the clueless American. For those who haven't read the article, who certainly should, what was it that sort of tuned you in or turned you on or made you aware of this, well, what you came to term the clueless American?
Well, Bob, to be honest, most of it comes from experience. You know, I've traveled the country quite a bit. I've met many people from different walks of life and from every political stripe, and you know, conversing with them, it just really dawns on me that most of these people really have no clue about what is going on. You know, they have no idea what their government is doing, why we're in Iraq, why we're all over the planet, really. And it seems to me that the American people are, I would say, the most propagandized people on the planet. You know, we think we're informed, but we listen to this stuff that oozes out of the television set, you know, the commercial radio with Rush Limbaugh and, you know, the Bill O'Reillys on television, and we think we're informed, and we're not. We just really don't have a clue about what's really happening.
Well, is there, to me, there's a difference between willful ignorance and ignorance by default, or whatever descriptor you would care to use. What do you think we've got more of in the country today? Are people deliberately turning away from learning the truth and learning the facts, or are they just too harried and working too hard and too busy, and, you know, it's easier to watch entertainment tonight than it is to digest real news?
Well, that would be an interesting debate. You know, I think there's definitely some of both at play here. I think a lot of it is willful ignorance in terms of speaking with people that I've worked with over the years and my own family, for instance. You know, I think we just have a very poor understanding of American history, and that sort of becomes the basis for everything else. You know, we have this fictionalized account of America. We have this fictionalized fairy tale account of America, you know, this...
the greatest country in the world.
Yeah, you know, we're the freest people, the most democratic people, and, you know, we really don't know much about the rest of the world and other cultures and so forth. And this is something that it's been programmed into us. I mean, I remember my earliest days of school, you know, you were a little kid standing there in the classroom, and I, you know, you put your hand over your heart, you said the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, and, you know, all sorts of stuff. You know, it's just all part of that conditioning. And unfortunately, what we're taught in school has very little to do with reality, you know. You know, we're taught that Columbus discovered America, and we sort of ignore all the millions of American Indians who were here to greet him. You know, they somehow didn't count, I guess, because they were non-white. So we just sort of discard them. And, you know, I think there's elements of that stems through this this philosophy that really has us basically trying to take over the world by brute force. You know, manifest destiny is basically the idea. And I think there are elements, too, where you've got people working, as you said, long hours, you know, very long hours, and you're just basically, you're a machine, you know, you're a robot for the man, and you're busy just trying to keep your head above water, to put food on the table and to buy a present or two for the children at Christmas, perhaps. And you're exhausted. I mean, I know, I've been there, I've done that. So there are elements of both, and I really don't know which are more prevalent, but
well, on the other hand, there are those people who watch Fox News.
Yeah, I have some in my family, unfortunately.
Well, that's got to make Thanksgiving dinner a little tough.
Oh, yeah, I get my marching orders when I go there. My mother always calls and says, "Now, don't talk about anything controversial." You know, and it's like, well, how do I know what's controversial and what isn't? You know?
Right.
So you kind of get your marching orders, and you sit there with the neoconservatives, and, you know, a lot of what you were saying about the so-called religious people, you know, I have elements of that in my own family. Very, very right-wing, very, very right-wing sister and brother-in-law, and you know, she's still fighting the Civil War, and you know, just it's just really, really impossible to have a conversation with those people. There's just there are no elements of rationality involved.
Well, is there what do you think? With these people, whether they're willfully clueless or just ignorantly clueless, is the greatest damage to us on the inside, or what happens to the rest of the world?
I don't know. That's a good question too. I can just say, in the case of one family member in particular, I think there's willful ignorance involved. I think there's just this unwillingness to confront, you know, the ugliness of what our government is doing in our names, and I think there's just a great fear to really face that, to face up to history, and to understand how this country was founded and what happened to the original inhabitants, the period of chattel slavery and labor, organized labor. I mean, the horrible violence that was done to the workers by the state militias, by the Phelps detectives. These are things that people really need to know about. To me, it's always been a history of inspiration because, you know, I get inspired when I find that there were people who stood up and fought back. You didn't take it, you know?
Right.
And nowadays, it just seems like we're collectively, of course, there are notable exceptions, but it seems like collectively we're just too damned accepting of everything. We bow down to authority. We've lost our ability to think critically and to weigh evidence and to see what's really there. You know, we've become sheeple. We don't really stand up and be men and women and fight for what's right, you know?
Yeah. Well, Charlie, obviously you're writing this stuff because you it does something for you, and you hope to accomplish something. Is there a hierarchy of what you hope to accomplish, or is it just more soul cleansing?
I think some of it is therapy, Bob. Really, just kind of getting some of it off my chest so I can kind of go on and deal with the next onslaught, because. I know you're aware of it. We're living in a very, very dangerous and bizarre time in our history, and I feel like one of the sane in the insane asylum. And you know, you have to find ways to hold on to your truth, to hold on to your sanity amidst all the insanity. And you know, it's good that there are outlets out there like Head On Radio and you know, Information Clearinghouse, Op-Ed News, and Pacifica Radio Network, places where you can still get a, you know, a refreshing drink of sanity occasionally, so you can just keep on dealing with the madness.
Well, you know, I got the idea that one of your jumping off points in the Clueless in America column was the excesses of so-called Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, when the real bargains galore. That has to be a little bit offensive to you, or I gather that it is.
Yeah, it is. It just seems to me, Bob, that the American people are like little automatons in general. You know, I have to confess, my wife is working part-time. She works a regular day job as a environmentalist with the Washington County Health Department over in Hagerstown, Maryland. And she's working during the Christmas season part-time at a Macy's at the mall in Hagerstown. And, you know, she's there working tonight till 11:30. You know, she went to work this morning at 8 o'clock. She'll be there till 11:30 tonight, so these people can run out and buy expensive junk that they really don't need. And I just think that, you know, the exposure to all of the commercialism from cradle to grave, from morning to night, is just constant. And people are basically bred to be consumers. And I went out to the mall in Hagerstown last week to pick my wife up to do some grocery shopping, and she was just getting off of her shift. And that's exactly how the people impressed me, running around. They were just like little programmed automatons, just running out and buying. And
or squirrels. Look, a shiny thing. I need it.
Exactly. And as I said, these people are bred to consume, and they're also bred to be consumed. They're being consumed by predatory capitalists. You know, the credit card debt, just the endless consumption.
Well, and this is particularly a hard time of year for that kind of thing, Charlie, because I don't know of anyone that has kids that doesn't face the Christmas season with every bit as much gloom and trepidation as they do the joy of the reason for the season, as the religion industry likes to put it.
Yeah,
it's stressful, and you know that. I mean, it's like picking up a bottle of liquor and saying, "I'm going to drink this now," and knowing that tomorrow you're going to feel like hell.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, this is December, and we got to buy the gifts, and you got to have the presents, and Santa's got to be accounted for. And you know that January's going to come, and you're going to rip open a credit card bill that is going to turn. It's going to be like seeing the burning tree. Your hair is going to turn white.
Well, that's exactly what people face. You know, they go out to the mall, they see a dress they like or a power tool they like, they go out and they buy it, and it takes them 30, 35 years to pay for it because they can only afford to make the minimum payment. Well, the credit card industry has all sorts of complicated algorithms they use to. Uh, det- determine how likely you are to be late on your payments, how likely you are to default. And they attach all these additional fees, and they make it, of course, they've been deregulated, they make it virtually impossible for people, basic average working families, to pay down their debt. And they don't want them to pay down their debt. They want to keep them, you know, that cash cow they can continuously milk. And then, you know, you throw in things like what are these electronic toys today, the Xboxes and PlayStations.
People have been trampled over PlayStation 3.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen the films at the Walmarts and things, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, this is just really not normal human behavior. These people are programmed to behave in this way. It isn't normal. What other animal behaves in this manner?
But yeah, exactly. And beyond the programming, though, there's an in addition to the programming, or part of the programming, as soon as Black Friday hits, the newscast that evening will say, and American retailers suggested that this may be a very good Christmas shopping, and then some blatherhead economist will come on and say, well, you know, this is vital to our economy. The vast majority of goods sold in America are sold in the 42 hours immediately following Thanksgiving. And so suddenly there's some sort of patriotic debt attached to it.
That's exactly right. It's all interconnected. I mean, do you remember after 9/11? Do you remember what George Bush said? Go out and resume your buying. Get Wall Street started. Go out to the malls. You know, that was patriotic. You know, go out there and consume. Go out there and spend. And you know, that's one of the reasons why we have bizarre phenomenon in the climate, the global warming, the climate change, and all sorts of bad effects that are stemming from this overconsumption. You know, we're 6% of the population here in the United States, and we're using 30% of the planet's resources, and we're the major contributor to the greenhouse gases. And you know, you still see people driving down the road in their Hummers and their great big SUVs, one person driving alone, 12 miles to the gallon or whatever those things get, and they don't have a clue. They do not understand cause and effect.
They don't understand, among other things, that they're creating more of the problems that they're being told to be terrified of every night on the evening babble, whether it's Fox, CNN. You know, they're all varying shades of gray, if you will. Charlie, what would the holiday season, since it is the holiday season, let's talk about this. What would the holiday season look like in Sullivan world?
In my world. Well, my wife and I will have a very, very simple Christmas. You know, we would just basically exchange one or two inexpensive items. And in terms of the rest of the family, you know, we'll get together and we'll have a dinner. We won't be able to talk about anything I'd like to talk about, of course. And, you know, we'll exchange some gifts. But, you know, I'll probably give photographs, some framed photographs of things that I did myself, you know, and sometimes I make my own frames and my own backings and everything. And, you know, it's going to be something personal, something that I did with my hands. And it's not going to be something that came from a shopping mall.
It'll be something real.
I'm sorry?
It'll be something real.
Yeah, it's going to be the real deal. Yeah.
Well, that seems nice, and it means a lot more. But again, you know, it's children, it's adults. I saw an ad the other day that shows a car, a brand new car, and you know, I'm a car freak. I'm it shows this car sitting, and it's got this big red bow, and the bow's tied on the roof of the car.
I've seen the same commercial, yeah.
And I'm sitting there thinking, you know, I'm a bad person because I can't go out and buy a $50,000 car and put it in the driveway for the wife. Boy, if I really loved her, by God, and it's the kind of, you know, and I catch myself doing it, and I realize then and there the level to which I'm being manipulated.
Well, the thing is, Bob, you know, you do realize, and that's the important thing, but so many people fail to realize just how blatantly they are being manipulated. You know, if you loved your wife, you could go out and buy her that diamond. You know, if you really loved your wife, you could buy her that shiny new Lexus. You'd have to go and hawk for it, but, you know, if you really loved her, you would prove it by getting her all these things. And yet, in spite of all these things we have, we seem to be a very spiritually empty people. You know, I like to say we really have no religious holidays in this country. We have commercial holidays.
Oh, exactly.
I mean, everything is commercialized. Labor Day should be a day where you celebrate labor, for instance, you know, and you kind of let the people have that day to ponder labor history and to just rest their weary bones. But what do we have? We have a white sale on Labor Day. You know, we have the Christmas holiday rush and Easter, everything. It's just all commercialized. And I think that's the real religion of America, unfortunately. I think there's this...
Well, that goes back to Calvin Coolidge. You know, the business of America is business.
Yes, exactly. And that really is the problem, I think.
But it cheats people, it cheats Americans of their fundamental humanness, doesn't it?
I think it does. I mean, really... how much is enough? I mean, why do we have to keep accumulating more and more stuff? And then they change the stuff a little bit, so whatever you have now is no longer in style, so you need to go out and buy the new stuff, you know? And it's just all this really not very subtle manipulation. You know, when you sit back and look at it, I try to look at these things kind of as a naturalist or something, looking at this odd behavior in this animal species. And I see it for what it is, and it seems like you see it that way, too. You know, you see these people being conditioned, you know, the carrots being held out before them, the nut or whatever, and, you know, look at them stand on their hind legs and reach for it and behave in this very odd fashion. And if you see things in that context, you can connect the dots. You can understand, oh, you know, these giant gas-guzzling vehicles we're driving around, which are really... you know, terrible monstrosities, inefficient, just horrible things.
Dangerous.
We think we have to have them because we're special. And, you know, to hell with the consequences of driving those things, which is why we're in Iraq to begin with, you know, and the whole Middle East policy is tied in with that fossil fuel, you know. It is a selfish sort of behavior, unfortunately.
Well, there's a road, I've been up your way a few times, and when you get off Interstate 68 and you come down through Maryland and you're headed toward Kaiser,
mm-hmm.
you drive past this monstrous, you're still in Maryland, this huge prison complex. I can't remember which prison it is, but I think it's the one that Lindy England and Charles Grainer worked at.
Hmm.
And you reference in the Clueless American article... you said this explains the bizarre sociopathic behavior induced by Black Friday and other strange phenomena fostered by capitalism. It can also explain America's world-leading per capita rate of incarceration and our pervasive addiction to drugs and alcohol in this way. Put that together a little bit more, would you?
Well, the point is, you know, we are a consuming culture, a material culture, and I believe we've lost our spiritual connection to the land, to community, and we have an emptiness within our soul that we try to fill with material goods, and it just doesn't work. You know, there's something missing, and at some subconscious level, we're aware of that, and that's why we have these bizarre behaviors. Now, I'm not a psychiatrist, but I believe that's what is happening. I think we have this tremendous desire to fill that spiritual void that we've created in living this kind of life and this culture of consumption and waste.
Well, is there a beginning point? Is there something that can be done in your thinking to step away from this? I mean, do we set up a movement where maybe it's too late for this year, but next year a progressive movement that says, you know what, say it's not a, you know, let's have a real war on Christmas, say no to Christmas, say no, you know, say no to commercial holidays?
Well, that might be a good starting point. I think idealistically that would be good. You know, we just really need people to start thinking about what they're doing. We need them to pry them away from the television set and all this commercial media is what we really need to do, because they're getting this fairy tale perception of reality that just isn't based in reality at all. So we have to be consumers, obviously, and obviously we will leave a ecological footprint on the planet by the mere fact that we exist. But, you know, that footprint is just much too big, and it intrudes on too many other species and too many other human beings. You know, you can take the Walmart model, for example. You know, people rush to the Walmart to buy the very cheap goods, and let's face it, they do have the lowest prices. But people fail to take into account, you know, the high cost of those low prices, you know, the sweatshops that are overseas, you know, the slave labor that takes place, the driving down of the wages for workers in all sectors of the economy, because Walmart is so big and so powerful, they have that ability. So we have to kind of see things from the roots up, I think, and understand, you know, the whole food chain and how everything's interconnected. You know, everything is cause and effect.
Well, I'd like to, I suppose on the one hand, the only thing any of us can be responsible for is our individual conduct.
Oh, absolutely.
On the other hand, if we join together and if we have people we can talk to, unlike the folks at your Christmas dinner table, we can begin to make a difference. But there are a lot of people like those who are at your Christmas dinner table all over this country. I went to get a chair for my dad at a local furniture store not too awfully back far back, and the salesman somewhere along the way says, "Well, you know, my boy's headed for Iraq." And I said, "Gee, man, I am so sorry. You know, I hope he comes home okay and you know, leads a normal life, and that'll be our wish for him." And he said, "Yeah, but he's got to do it. After all, the nerve of them people, they come over here and attacked us on our own soil."
Yeah, that's exactly it. People just don't have a clue, Bob. You know, you've got the commercial media spewing this nonsense day after day, playing it day after day, the little sound bites, repeating it over and over and over. The talking points just go on and on and on. And if you repeat something often enough, it seems like people assume that it's fact, and it becomes their reality. And that's what these Bush people are doing. You know, they're basically creating their own reality, and I think that's their own terminology.
Well, they said they would. While you people are sitting there studying history, we're going to make it.
Yeah.
And that's scary as hell to me, Charlie. You know, you're a West Virginian. I'm a West Virginian. Obviously, this place is very special to you as it is to me. You know, it baffles me. You know, and I don't know where you come down on this. I believe in green. The greener the energy, the better it is.
Oh,
and anything in this state that isn't coal,
oh yes,
is greener.
King coal.
So you know, there's a windmill project. It's going to put 200 union workers to work for, you know, years.
Mm-hmm.
Literally a thousand or so or more windmills on a ridge that's been strip mined already. It's of no harm, you know, and so there's a what I call a fake environmental movement in Greenbrier County of people screaming NIMBY, not in my backyard. And so the people like me who oppose who want to see those windmills built, we're the weirdos.
Yeah, they're very good at sort of distorting reality, aren't they? I mean, what could be worse than mountaintop removal? And let's face it, big business runs the government. Big business runs the state. And in the state of West Virginia, big business is coal, King Coal. What is his name? Blankenship, I think.
Yeah, yeah. We call him Don Colleoni, Don Blankenstein.
Oh, yeah.
The guy who hasn't figured out that they don't put U-Hauls behind hearses. Him, yeah, sure.
Well, we're going back to the days, you know, where King Coal ran the cities. You know, they ran the towns. They ran the local government. You know, they brought out the felt detectives to shoot down the workers who were striking for better working conditions or for decent wages or for reduced hours. It seems to me we're turning back the hands of time. You know, we're going back to those days where, you know, big business is just controlling everything, and we see it on a national level, and we certainly see it on a state level. And, you know, I wholeheartedly agree, the greener the better, but there's so much media distortion of the facts, and people are so easily fooled. We just, as a people, it seems like Americans just simply do not have that much intellectual curiosity about things. I don't know that we really value truth as much as we should as a culture. Maybe we're intellectually lazy. I don't know what it is, but this is one of those things, you know, I bang my head against the wall frequently trying to find a way to break through to people, to make them see, to make them understand, to at least question things. You know, the first stage has to be an awakening, and then there has to be education, and then after that, something better will come along, you know? But as long as we're in this sort of comatose state that we seem to be in, not much good is going to happen for West Virginia or the United States or the world.
Well, West Virginia will always be a third world nation as long as there is coal in our ground. Because somebody will try to get at it, and as long as they're trying to get at the coal, nobody else with any kind of forward-thinking industry is going to come here.
That's right, exactly.
Because their workers are going to consume mercury. The waters are poisoned. The air is filthy. Charleston is one great big cancer cluster. Why in God's name, if you were a forward-thinking industry, why would you come here and subject your people to that?
Exactly. That's part of the problem.
Well, I wanted to take you on. If you've got a couple more minutes, I wanted to take you to this other article because that you have got up over at Op-Ed News, Ghosts in the Machine.
Oh yeah.
We joke on this program from time to time about Agent Fred. he's not just any Fred. He spells his name Phred. Agent Fred listens to the program every night.
Oh, I'm sure Agent Fred does, and he's a real person.
So periodically, I or some caller will say something innocuous like Chesapeake Bay title charts, and you know, just to make sure that Agent Fred's not sleeping on the job. But you found a real example of Agent Fred right smack dab in the middle of your computer, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Let me just, before I go into that, let me relate a story. A while back, I believe it was maybe a year ago, I was doing an interview with Ambrose Lane on Pacifica Radio out of Washington, D.C., WPFW, and we were talking about 911 and whatever hit the Pentagon, and I was just talking about the 911 Commission report was largely a work of fiction. You know, I said, it just doesn't add up, and they're not portraying the truth. And you know, Bob, someone called from the Pentagon.
No kidding.
They called right during the show, and they tried to poo-poo me. But it was kind of funny, and I felt pretty obvious. They are out there. They are watching. And that just struck me as really...
Well, you know, I got a listener sent me the newly released video from the Doubletree Hotel last night.
Mm-hmm.
Of whatever it was hitting the Pentagon. And, you know, my problem is I agree with you 100% on the 9/11 Commission report. It was untrustworthy from its inception. From the minute that I heard that George Bush's first choice to head the damn thing was Henry Kissinger.
Oh, yeah. So much for credibility.
Well, yeah, why bother? I mean, you know, go have lunch, but don't pretend to tell it. And I don't know what happened on that day. And there are those who want me to come out and say that George Bush put on a black raincoat and a black hat and planted the bombs in the Twin Towers all by himself with an evil grin and a hatchet in his hand. I'm not going to do that.
Well, you're being responsible as a journalist. I mean, sure, I wouldn't put it past him, but what we need to do is have a real investigation. We need to have a real look into the facts of the case. And you know, unfortunately, they destroyed so much of that evidence so quickly. You know, they shipped the steel girders off to, I think, China somewhere. And
we pulled a 747 up from the bottom of the Atlantic Ocean and put it together piece by piece in a hangar.
Exactly.
And we couldn't hang on to the steel from, I mean, the entire state of New Jersey is over there. We could have put the 9/11 site in. Oh boy, the Jersey people are going to get pissed at me for that. but no, there's plenty of places we could have taken the debris from 9/11 and analyzed it.
Exactly.
You know, it is weirder than hell that a black box can't survive, but a passport can.
Well, you know, I mean, the only thing I can state emphatically, Bob, is that the official version is a pack of lies.
Right.
It's a fabrication. What the real facts are, I cannot say with certainty. I just believe they really need to be thoroughly investigated. And the people responsible, and I will tell you this much, I don't believe that Muslims had anything to do with it. I just think there's something very fishy about it, and we really need to get to the bottom of it. Will that ever happen in my lifetime? I doubt it.
Any more than you're going to find out? No. The paradigm for this is obviously the Warren Commission report.
Exactly. I was just about to mention that.
And that's a bunch of hokum and a bunch of fishiness. And yeah, I do, Charlie. I believe that there are a whole bunch of really pissed off people in the Middle East who would like to do something to get back at us, because
God knows we have done enough to them. Could you blame them, really? I mean,
no, that's what I said. We've done enough to them.
Yeah.
Starting in 1952 with the overthrow of Mohammad Mossadegh.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, there's definitely, they would have probable cause. There's no question about that.
But the thing is, whoever those people were, I remember looking at the passenger manifest the day after, because for some reason they put that out there, and I couldn't find Mohammed Atta's name on there anywhere.
Well, you know, five of those people are known to be alive in other countries. I mean, it's been documented that they are alive. You know, five of the 19 hijackers are still living.
Yeah.
You know, so it just doesn't add up. However you want to couch the argument, who did it, I just don't think we have enough information available to the public to make a really informed judgment about it.
No, we don't. And the thing that, lies at the base of that, we've killed 700,000 people in Iraq.
Yes.
Over whoever the hell did it.
Yes.
And if you believe in anything like karma or what goes around comes around, or do unto others as you would have them do unto you, the fee for the piper that we will pay.
Oh gosh, yeah.
It's one of those Mark Twain moments, or Ben Franklin, or whoever it was that said the American people had best not pray for justice.
Yeah. Oh, how true.
I don't think we could stand the justice that's coming. For that,
what's really galling, and I know this troubles you greatly as well, is when you hear these idiots like George Bush on there talking about spreading democracy and freedom. I could just pull my hair out when I hear that, and I hear other people repeating it and believing it, and it's just so. Again, it gets back to being clueless, just believing the lies that are spewed forth in the corporate media. It's just incredible. I mean, my sister, the neoconservative, I should feel guilty about saying this on the air, I guess, but...
We won't tell her we exist, Charlie.
I'm sure she's not listening. she really believes that these people came over and they did this because they're jealous of our freedom, But she doesn't have a clue about how much of those freedoms are imposed upon those people over there.
They hate us for our home mortgages.
Yeah, yeah.
They hate us for our plasma TVs.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing that she believes, and
if we could just have McMansions and tract housing in the land between the Euphrates and the Tigris, everything would be okay.
That's right. We're trying to bring McDonald's to the Middle East. I guess it's already there, isn't it?
Yeah, sad to say. Yeah, I'm looking at an email here from a good friend of ours, CB, out in the northern reaches of California. She says that where 9/11 is concerned, that it too will go the way of JFK if we don't yell our heads off and keep yelling. And she typed that in all caps. She says the only thing that ensures we failed to get the truth in time to do any good is because we don't try.
Oh, I agree wholeheartedly. And that's one of the things I've written about for quite some time, is that, we pay a lot of homage to these ideas of freedom and so forth, of democracy. And I've been arguing for a long, long time that we do not live in a democracy. We live in a plutocracy, where the wealthy are basically ruling and calling the shots. And the only way we can ever turn this form of government, whatever you choose to call it, into a democracy is really, I think we are going to have to get out in the streets en masse, just like they did in the civil rights days, day after day after day, economic boycotts. You know, I'm talking nonviolent revolution here. I'm not talking about armed revolution.
I understand. I think, however, and we I find us doubling back, Charlie, on the arguments about clueless America. It is going to be harder, if not nigh unto impossible, to accomplish what you're talking about, because there was a different reality at work in the days of the civil rights fight. Because somehow, you know, young men and women could get on a bus in New York and come south and do so knowing that somehow or another they would be supported.
Mm-hmm.
I've made the argument on a number of occasions that all the weekend 2 million, 10 million people surrounding the White House won't make a damn bit of difference, because they know on Monday we got to get back to work.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And that's why the civil rights movement worked so well. You know, there was this commitment. There was this sacrifice. And I think what we've lost, and I think this is kind of your point, is that we've lost that willingness to struggle. You know, we want everything to be easy. Oh, we'll just turn out on the weekend twice a year, and everything, you know, we've done our part. Everything.
Yeah, but I got to be back at work on Monday, because the boss said if I wasn't there right on time, I'd lose my job. And if I lose my job, I lose my boat and my house, and I won't have any health care anymore. And, well, you know, the list is endless. Some of it is commercial consumerism. Some of it is the real necessity of staying alive.
Well, we've really gotten ourselves tangled in this web now, haven't we? You know, all these things are interrelated, and all of these things produce specific types of behavior. And, you know, it's just connecting the dots. You know, that's one method of control. You know, if you keep people in debt, you control them. You know, take away their car, take away their house, take away their livelihood.
Boy, that bankruptcy bill sure was handy, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. Yes, it was.
Because you can't turn around and bankrupt Citibank anymore.
You can't, but the corporations can still do it. Isn't that odd?
Oh, darn right. Then they can go bankrupt, and they can call pensioners. They can list them as liabilities on their schedule of liabilities in their bankruptcy form, and get a Bush appointee federal bankruptcy judge to say, "Thy liabilities are no more," and then put the company up for sale. Watch it get sold. Watch it get bought. Watch it make monstrous profits for the people at the top of the economic ladder or the economic food chain within that company, and then sell it off again and screw another group of workers.
That's exactly what they do. And you know, I caught a little bit of the show last evening, and I think someone, I don't know if it was you or one of the callers, was talking about this trickle-down theory,
yeah,
you know, which is really the theory of capitalism, and that's what I don't like about it, is that it accrues all of this wealth at the top of the food chain, and only small amounts trickle down to those at the bottom, and, you know, the bottom feeders are now getting nothing, and you know, we're just seeing so much of the wealth concentrated, and then, you know, you've got the class divisions as a result of that, socioeconomic classes, and my goodness, it's just a very inherently unfair, unjust system, and I think that's a big problem with what ails America, is that the system is just really, I fear it's broken beyond repair, to be honest, Bob.
Well, and that was, you know, you were talking about nonviolent revolution. The civil rights movement arose because the level of agony for the people who were being denied those rights got to a point where there was what does Lady Macbeth say? She says something about, or maybe it's Macbeth himself who says, "I'm covered in so much blood already. I'm as bloody going forward as I am turning back."
Yeah.
And you know, when you reach a tipping point like that, something has to change. And that was, you know, I think that had something to do with the civil rights movement. There was literally nothing left to lose.
Exactly.
People were being bombed, hung, Emmett Till with the cotton gin fan chains wrapped around him and thrown into the river. At that point, when that day comes, there's nothing that the government can do is worse than what's already being done.
That's exactly right.
We're not there.
You just have nothing left to lose. No, we're not there, and you know we're probably not going to get there in our lifetime. And I view what I'm doing as basically laying a foundation that's going to take time, maybe generations. However, there is always the possibility of something catastrophic happening, like a total economic collapse, like the Great Depression.
Which is not outlandish to ponder.
Oh, no. The signs are getting more and more worrisome. That could change everything in a heartbeat. When you start getting enough people out on the street, you get enough people disenfranchised, things can happen very quickly. And it won't be a very pretty time to be around when it happens.
Well, China sold off some dollars a couple of weeks ago and had money fund managers in New York squealing like Monty Python characters.
Oh, yeah. If China and Japan pull the plug on us, we're doomed, you know. God knows what's going to happen then.
I was given some facts the other day, and you know some of this is proto-capitalistic or I don't know how we describe it. In 2008, China will begin exporting automobiles. I may have mentioned this last night too. China will begin exporting their automobiles. They bought up a bunch of old, shut down, run down. Well, bought up. I mean, it's China. Auto factories.
Hmm.
And retooled them with modern technology, and they're turning out these automobiles. The people who work in those plants, those are the plum industrial jobs in China because they pay more. And what they pay is 82 cents an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
And they're going to export those cars to the United States in 2008, and there's not a damn thing we can do about it. And the tariff rate on those cars that they export to the U.S. is going to be something like 2.25%. If, however, Ford and General Motors want to export automobiles to China, the Chinese tariff rate is 24.5%.
Isn't that incredible?
Now, I can't even call that capitalism, Charlie.
Well, you know, that's pretty much what happened to the furniture industry, Bob. You know, they removed the tariffs on the Chinese imports to this country. So, you know, this fine handcrafted stuff we used to build here in West Virginia, it just can't compete with the stuff that's coming out of China. So the shops are closing down and people are becoming photographers or whatever.
I used to love to buy my shoes from a mall chain called Hanover Shoes.
I remember Hanover, yeah.
Made great shoes. Some of them were made in West Virginia.
I worked in a factory many, many years ago, Bob, that actually made Hanover Shoes, Hagerstown Shoe Company.
Yeah. And they were darn good shoes. They don't exist. I used to buy Rocky brand boots that were made over in Cambridge, Ohio.
Oh, yes. I remember Rocky boots.
And when it was an American company, you know, they were waterproof. They weren't water resistant, by God. They were waterproof.
Right.
And if so much as a drop of water got in them, you stick them back in the box, you mail them and to Cambridge, and they send you back a new pair. No questions asked. They're gone. They're in China.
Yep. Well, look at L.L. Bean, you know, the main hunting shoe, the classic main hunting shoe, you know, that's made in China. Bass Shoe Company, everything made in China now.
Yeah, and that's why, you know, one of the advertisers that we promote on this program operates through a website called nosweatshop.com. We've got a link on our web pages. If you go through our link, we actually make a tiny amount of money on stuff sold. We're encouraging people to buy from them because their stuff is made in the United States. It is union made. The union members have an ownership stake in the company, which I consider to be working capitalism.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's an element of capitalism that is ignored anymore, Charlie, and that is that Adam Smith said that the risk would be shared in a capitalistic enterprise.
Ha ha. In a real capitalistic enterprise, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, tell me how the CEO, if the stock tanks tomorrow, well, Enron.
Yeah. Well, they perverted everything. I mean,
it's not capitalism. It's not Adam Smith capitalism.
The costs are socialized and the profits are privatized. They can't lose. I mean, it is a win-win for them and a lose-lose for the workers, the real producers.
Yeah, it's like walking into a casino and the slot machines are all cherries.
I mean, I've always been an advocate of the old wobbly philosophy of one big union, really, because I think we need global solidarity, just basically to combat this corporate globalization. you know.
Right. The guy who's got a good union job, who gets a good union wage in the United States, doesn't need to hate or fear
exactly.
the poor schlub in Indonesia who's working for 12 cents an hour and chained to the table. He needs to be doing what he can, if he can do anything, to see that that poor schlub in Indonesia has a union, has rights, and has a living wage.
I agree wholeheartedly.
And then the playing field, it never becomes entirely level, but it becomes a little less slopey.
Absolutely. Yeah, the way it is now, we're just pitting worker against worker in different countries, and that's the same thing they did here before.
Right, and the thing is, you know, first, you know, we got NAFTA and GATT and WTO, and the jobs went to Mexico. Well, Mexican, on par with what had been predicted by the free traders, Mexican wages rose. And as quickly as Mexican wages rose, guess where the jobs went? Out of Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
And as quickly as the wages rise in any one of these given sweatshop countries, the jobs go somewhere else.
Isn't that amazing? Seeking the lowest common denominator.
And, you know, you and I, to get back to one of your articles, you and I are engaged in something that I'm sure is being databased and analyzed somewhere. Do please, if you don't mind, what did you find and how did you find it inside your computer?
Well, actually, what I found was not necessarily inside the computer, now that I've done even more research on this, but what they do is they put their spy software at various ports along the computer and along the route that the computer uses to connect on the Internet. What they do is they have what they're called are hops. In other words, they're routes between servers on the Internet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to see, well, when I did a trace route on my computer, basically what I did was trace route, and I used www.informationclearinghouse.info, number one because it's out in California, so I wanted something fairly far from me geographically. And I looked at the first 15 hops, first 15 connections on the route, and the very first one is always the NSA at Mount Airy, NSA 1 Mount Airy, and that's where the NSA is headquartered. So to me, that indicates that everything going into and out from my computer is going through an NSA server for whatever purposes they're going to use it for. I guess they're gathering evidence to use against me at some future date. You know, they're building the Halliburton's building the FEMA concentration camps around the country. I think there's over 600 of them and more under construction. And no one knows for sure what those things are for, but I'm beginning to think I may have some idea.
Yeah, they're for you and me.
And I'm not liking it. Do you prefer the top bunk or the bottom?
I ain't playing.
Me neither.
No, I'm a well-armed West Virginian. I ain't going. You know, I'm going to take that, you know, I am not going to take that, you know, first they came for the trade unionists, then they came for the Catholics, then they came for the liberals, and then when they came for me, there was nobody because everybody was gone, because I'd spent all my time saying nothing. I am saying something every blessed day of my life.
That's right.
And, you know, I'm hoping that we get some relief by way of the torture bill, because one of the things that we did here, Charlie, is went over chunks of the torture bill when it was promulgated, and I showed beyond a shadow of a doubt that that thing is intended for U.S. citizens. The great media lie that, you know, this can only be used on people who aren't Americans, that's BS.
Well, that's what troubles me, Bob. I don't see the new Congress with a Democratic majority even taking up these issues. I mean, we have to put so much pressure on these Congress people to perform because, you know, if they want to have any credibility, that's the first thing that has to go, you know. Habeas corpus has to be restored. The Military Commissions Act has to go. You know, we have to get these draconian laws, you know, they just have to be utterly, completely destroyed. We have to drive a stake through their heart. And yet, how many American people are even aware that they exist? When I talked to my family about it, they hadn't heard about it. They didn't know anything about it. They look at me like I'm crazy.
Habeas who?
Yeah. Well, did he go to school with me or what?
Yeah, that's only something that lawyers worry about. That's a technicality that lets murderers get off after they've killed and eaten a little girl. You know, I hate that mindset.
Yeah.
You know, and it speaks to me of an educational failure. Habeas corpus should be a word that you're not allowed to get out of high school without being able to spell, define, and describe.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you're going back to the Magna Carta, you know. This is just... And again, the American people just, in so many levels, seem, you know, other than a small percentage, appear to be totally clueless about what is happening. And I kind of, you know, have this mental image of an insect being caught on a spider web, you know, and the venom's been injected and you're paralyzed and they're wrapping the strands of silk around you. And I just see it getting more and more, more and more frightening. Though, you know, maybe frightening is not the right word, but I just see the police state emerging, and I see so little resistance to it happening. And again, you know, you beat the drums, you know, you try your best to inform people, and I hear from people who are very well informed, but they're a very small minority, I fear.
Well, there are days, Charlie, when it's incredibly frustrating. There are others when it's not. This is one of the not frustrating moments for me, at least. I hope it is for you. Because as long as you're doing what you're doing and I'm doing what I'm doing and all the other hosts on the horn and other liberal talkers, progressive talkers around the country who are addressing these issues, then that means we're building a real, and it's been bandied about so much it's almost lost its meaning, but building a real alternative media.
Well, and, Bob, that's exactly what they did in the early days of the labor movement. You know, when people were striking to get the 8-hour workday, you know, the corporate media, the newspapers of the day were just, you know, they were referring to these people as communists and just saying horrible things about them and distorting the truth. And the only thing they could do was create their own alternative media, which they did.
Well, it's interesting you would bring up that particular example, Charlie, because it is, you know, we are sponsored by labor. And one of what I think is the more progressive and forward thinking labor organizations in this country, that is the Carpenters Union. But we have incredible difficulties. I won't lie to you or anybody else on this program. First you got to get your foot in the door, and then you've got to explain to these people, and you know, if it's a 15-30 minute meeting, you don't have time to do labor history.
Yeah.
And explain to them that they have built their own media once, it worked, and it's time to do it again if they want to continue having any viability at all. But you've got to explain to folks that they are not, and you know, it's a tough thing to get through, Charlie, because it's kind of heartbreaking to admit you aren't, no labor union is ever going to get a fair shake from ABC or CBS or NBC.
Just like in the old days, Bob.
Right, because among other things, all of these outfits have busted their asses to make sure that they never have an organized shop.
Exactly.
I worked at CNN for a couple of years, and every now and then there'd be a card signing attempt made there, and it would usually, given what I was doing, it was through the IBEW, and as soon as people started signing cards, the meeting started taking. But don't you sign one of those things? And you know, two weeks later, you look at your chat. Look, I got a raise.
Funny how that works.
Yeah, and there went the union movement. But all that's taken place. So why would any labor organization fool itself into thinking that any newspaper, any radio station, any TV network is going to give them the ability to get their message out? And what we're trying to get across, Charlie, is that we are giving an opportunity to get the message out. We're talking about what matters. You know, this nurses strike, I don't know if you're familiar with it, this nurses strike that's going on in Las Vegas right now ought to be leading every newscast in the country.
But you don't hear anything about it.
No. No, not if you're the average clueless American who just got home from shopping and maybe a trip to Boston Market, or you picked up some Boston Market goodies because Rush Limbaugh's advertising them now. Good. Yeah, $25 million a year, and he eats Boston Market take home food. I don't think so.
Well, Bob, I worked about 17 or 18 months at a Target distribution center up in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
years ago. And it was the worst job I ever had in my life, I think. started out, it seemed like it was a pretty decent place to work. But, you know, of course, the red flags came up when I started there. They spent a good deal of the 4-week training period discussing why we don't need unions and things like that. And, of course, I ended up getting walked out of there for trying to organize a union. Those places are just horrible, horrible places for anyone to work. I mean, the things I saw there, they're slave labor camps. I mean, I just see these people who are working just endless overtime. They don't know where they're at half the time, you know. I just see them being browbeat over production. And, you know, I finally just said, you know, enough of it. I'm going to start putting literature in the break rooms. I'm going to start putting literature in the bathrooms. I'm going to start talking. And I don't give a damn if I get fired or not. And I was really amazed how long I lasted there because, you know, everyone kind of knew I was the radical there. And, you know, we began having meetings off-site. And, of course, we had stool pigeons and people, you know, told on me. And then I started having strange things happen to me. And at work, I was under constant video surveillance, and my cohorts were also. And eventually, we all got walked out of there. I was the first one to go, of course, because I was the organizer, the ringleader. And, you know, they got rid of all the troublemakers. And right after we left, I did notice there was an ad in a newspaper. And I noticed, too, that they got a nice little raise right after all the troublemakers were gone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the first job I've been fired from for trying to organize the workers. But, you know, so be it. I think, you know, you have to hold on to your truth. You have to keep that truth alive, and you know it's going to cost you something, and you do what you have to do.
But it's going to cost you something, but you realize that you're better off paying it than expecting the next generation to.
Oh, absolutely. And I wish more people would see it in those terms.
Well, Charlie, I thank you for everything. I'm getting a lot of positive response about our little conversation here. Just heard from one of our listeners, Cindy, out in the state of Washington, who says, I work every day writing to lawmakers about the issues you're visiting on today's show. This is why I'm too exhausted to phone in. For example, I just stepped out of the kitchen where I'm cooking dinner to come in here and jot this quick memo, because what you're discussing is the utmost import today.
Well, bless her soul.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's what's at the end of the day, when we play the closing music for the program, and or we finish a broadcast day, you know, we started out, Charlie, with this show going 3 hours a night.
Mm-hmm.
As of this day, we start at noon and we finish at midnight.
Oh,
that's how much we've added to the Head On Radio Network.
Excellent.
That's how, you know, that's volunteer spirit. That is dedication to a future that's worth living in for our children. And, you know, if we can, and, you know, it blows my tiny mind. I mean, I got a bunch of education under my belt, but that doesn't make me any less of a simpleton. It astonishes me that I talk through a microphone into the phone, have a conversation with you, a couple of West Virginians, and it means something to somebody in Washington or L.A. or Tennessee or Florida.
Well, Bob, I think you're right. I believe I heard you say earlier this evening that the Internet was the future, and I really believe that, because you can bypass, you know, the federal government, at least for the time being. I'm wondering when they're going to try to pull the plug on this and, you know, take down our websites and things like that. But, you know, for now, I think this is just a really powerful media outlet, and we really need to use it to the full extent.
While we can.
And, you know, it's really, the bottom line is, Bob, we have to be willing to struggle. We have to be willing to understand that freedom isn't free, and it's going to cost something, and you're going to have to make sacrifices if you really believe in it. And if you don't, you know, we're just paying homage to symbols of freedom, but not the real thing.
Exactly. When I was a little boy, Charlie, I was promised a lot of things, but one of the promises that was never made was that any of this was going to be easy.
That's right.
Well, you know, I this is our first conversation. I hope it won't be our last, Charlie. Perhaps we should email a little bit. I get the idea that you're a well-liked guy as far as the folks who share their time and listen to what we put out there. I know people would love to hear from you more and more, and I know you're also very busy right now. But let's do stay in touch, and I'd love, you know, anytime you feel like sharing something that's put a burr under your saddle, I hope you hang on to the phone number and know that we'll always answer it.
Well, my goodness, I could be there every day. But let's do keep in touch, and let's do this again. It's been a great pleasure, Bob, and it just kind of lifted my spirits talking to someone else who understands what's going on and knowing that there are other people out there all across the country who, you know, they're seeing with clear eyes.
Absolutely, absolutely.
That is inspiring.
It is. Like I said, when we shut down at the end of every day, it's just, you know, I look up and go, wow. And there's a standing invite. We have a live chat room at headonradionetwork.com, and you just click chat room and register and go on in. I'm sure folks would love to see you there if you get a few minutes to walk in and say howdy. I think you've been elevated to sort of liberal Elvis status.
Well, I'm not sure that I deserve that, but we all do what we can.
All right. Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you, Bob.
And our best to your wife as she, I don't know, maybe applies this to a master's degree in sociology or something, watching consumer behavior in Macy's. That just scares me.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our new friend, Charlie Sullivan. You can read him at opednews.com. You can read him at informationclearinghouse.info. I while we were talking, I looked and at Op-Ed News, pulled up an entire page of articles going back to March 5th, and they are all good. In fact, the March 5th article was what caused me to write to Charlie in the first place, and we started a bit of an email correspondence. If you hear me talk about West Virginia a lot, you would do yourself a favor to go to opednews.com and read this article. Even though it's older, it's still relevant. It's called Matewan Revisited. And if you liked Charlie's writing, you're going to love this. Oh my God, I commented on the article. There it is. Nothing has changed. And many thanks to our good friend Cossack for sending along the Ghost in the Machine article. And the thing is, it's not, as Charlie explained, it's not technically inside the machine. It's the route that you travel, and somewhere along the way, I suppose. Is this the first movie reference of the night? Foster Brooks, kind of. Everybody here, and I'm sure all the hands are going to go up. You know, this is just like Romper Room and the Doobie. I can see your hands, okay? Brazil, the movie. Renegade Plumbers, okay? And this ties into something else I wanted to make mention of because it's something that sort of conflicts me. In Brazil, there was a renegade plumber played by, was it Robert De Niro? I think so. Love the movie, but you know, society grown into a plutocracy, much as Charlie was describing, where you know, getting a you had to have a pirate plumber. Are we gonna have to have pirates on the internet? I guess I'm gonna have to get all curious and learn how to trace my route. Even as I speak, someone is typing me an email telling me how. Ooh, I didn't even have to get out the crystal ball. I just know you guys are that sharp. Whew, read the book. But I'm sure, you know, everything. This goes straight into the stream, and before it ever gets to our streaming servers, I'm sure it's been through the NSA. Hey, Fred, eat me. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, see, Agnes wins flies with sugar. I throw vinegar.
Fred, don't pay any attention to him. Come join the party. We know that you've had a lot of budget cuts and you're under a lot of stress. You know, you don't even have to tell us who you are. Just call in, vent, get it out. We're here for you, man.
It's a rotten job you got, Fred, spying on your own fellow Americans. It can't make you feel good at the end of the day. No, but renegade plumbers. We're gonna have to do something to stop the spying. I don't know what that something is, because I want the internets to continue, and I don't want Ted Stevens clogging up the tubes. But there is another story that's out there that might be worth 7 minutes or so before we take our bottom of the hour break. Hey, how many other talkers are there out there that actually have the ability to go on without a break? You know, most talk show hosts are glad when the commercial comes around because it's a chance to get up, move around, maybe go to the little talk show host room. No.
I'm sorry.
Not yet. I think she needs a little producer's room. But no, the story that came out of New York today. And it gives me a little case of the creeps. The city of New York has banned trans fats. Now, we are not talking about fat guys in dresses, okay? We're talking about the mono and diglycerides and, you know, partially hydrogenated palm cotton or palm cotton seed or soy oil. If you take an oil and you blow a lot of hydrogen through it, this is a simplified version, you can make a solid out of it. Anything from Crisco to stuff that's inside your candy bar. For all I know, it's in my peach knee-high. But the thing is, it melts at certain temperatures and then it re-solidifies at others, and it will operate as a solid at room temperature, and it will operate as a solid in you. And the city of New York, the New York City Board of Health, voted today to make New York the nation's first city to ban trans fats, partially hydrogenated oils. And that means everything from the corner pizzeria to big-time bakeries, restaurants, bodegas. The restaurant industry is saying that the ban was burdensome and unnecessary. And of course, when it says the restaurant industry says that, that means some paid flack bastard who doesn't contribute anything to our economy, just as Charlie was saying. You know, there's people in this country who don't do anything and get rich not doing it. This guy is doing nothing. This girl, this woman, is doing nothing but sitting out there trying to encourage people to do things that are otherwise bad for them. And yet, by the same token, there's something troubling about this, because any time you enact a prohibition, you get a black market backlash. And I've got this vision of some guy in a trench coat outside an elementary school going, "Hey, kid, I got some parquet. Want some shed spread?" No, man, this is good Crisco. No, it ain't been cut. This is the good Crisco. "Hey, kid, these French fries were fried in partially hydrogenated..." Wait for it. "Palm kernel oil." Yeah, I said palm kernel oil. "Hey, kid, the first one's free, okay?" And, you know, what? You go to the restaurant 10 years from now in New York and you have to give the special knock. And the little door opens up, and you gotta say, "I hear the coconuts are dropping this time of year." And the guy behind the door says, "Only in the southern latitudes." "Yeah, okay, come on in." And you get to go in and you eat stuff with trans fats in them. I am sure that when this story gets around to being addressed, probably tomorrow or the next day or so, by Flush Flimball, he will scream that freedom in America is dying because the liberals, my friends, the liberals in New York City have decided that you no longer have the freedom to choose what it is you want to eat. I told you years ago when the tobacco litigation began that it would begin with tobacco, but pretty soon they would be telling you what could go on your table. Again, no crystal ball, just common sense. Anybody you ask will tell you that that trans fats are pure poison. And this, you know, and poster child! By virtue of my Scottish heritage, I store, biologically speaking, I store lipids and cholesterols and triglycerides. I watched a doctor look at my blood test results one time, and the blood drained entirely out of his face when he saw my triglyceride levels. And he goes, "We got to do this again, dude. Your triglycerides are 700. This has got to be a mistake." And I went, "No, that's low."
You gotta be dead.
He goes, "We got to get you on a pill." But, you know, my people stored fats because they lived in northern latitudes. You know, us and the Eskimos. But this stuff is poison. It doesn't exist in nature. In many ways, you're better off eating butter than you are eating buttery, shed-spread country crock. Crock of what? But I just, I wonder, and again, it's part of that clueless in America thing Charlie identified so expertly. That government regulation was unnecessary, or would have been unnecessary, if it weren't. This is all created. This is the matter of bringing the snakes to Hawaii to get rid of the rats, and then you got to bring the mongooses to get rid of the snakes, and then you got to get something in there to get rid of the mongooses. This is that. We have to have a law to get rid of the trans fats because we are so thoroughly consumerized that we find it impossible to stand on our feet in this system and demand of our corporate suppliers that they quit freaking poisoning us. Here, sir, please stop poisoning me. You ever buy Campbell's Healthy Request soup? No, with lower fat, or how about Ritz crackers, the low fat version? You know what you get because they're not putting any flat. You know, the French in cooking school they've got a little saying. It's like a mantra. I mean, you don't get to start boiling water until you can say it nicely, and it's something like le gras et la flavour. The fat is flavor. Look at the ingredient list on a box of Schnitz crackers or the Keebler Crack House wafers or whatever. Look at the ingredients list and you'll see on the low-fat version, oh, sure, they've taken out half the fat. They replaced it with twice as much salt because it don't taste worth it. It's like eating cardboard. Jesus. You know, meanwhile, across town, you can go to the little international market, get the frozen Indian flatbread, and it's better than anything that Nabisco ever put out. And not half as rotten for you. I don't want to eat no Indian food. Jesus. You know, so this is where we are. We've got to have a law because restaurants can't be persuaded to stop poisoning their patrons. They won't do it voluntarily. Remember, you know, that voluntary regulation that the dear leader was talking about? Well, what we're going to have is a system of credits. And big polluters can trade credits with small polluters because the small polluters aren't polluting anyway. And we'll have voluntary compliance inside the industry. Horse hockey. Bug spray. Tell it to the Marines. It don't work. So in the absence of a workable system, a workable voluntary system on the part of industry, you find yourself with a law that says the Board of Health voted Tuesday to make New York the nation's first city to ban artery-clogging artificial trans fats at restaurants. And all the sons of bitches had to do was just say, hey, They're not going to use this poison anymore. But no, they had to be told to. Because they are more interested in money than they are in people. And it's no different with the Restaurant Owners Association than it is with the tobacco lobby. Really. So we'll take a break. And we'll run with it downhill to 9 o'clock Eastern Time. If you want to jump in the conversation, please feel free to do so. 877-443-2366 is the number. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Email to Bob at headonradio.com. My new favorite song. I'm Bob Kincaid. Still find time of an evening to go fishing on the river, put a fence around my land. Read a story to my baby, I'm a West Virginia man. I work in a sawmill 8 hours a day. Eat supper, read the paper, put up 100 bales of hay. Run off a batch of moonshine, relax next to the fan. Chew tobacco, sing a fine song, I'm a West Virginia man. West Virginia man. All right, I hear you.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. 600 SEIU nurses have been locked out and are on the picket lines at two hospitals in Las Vegas in a contract renewal dispute. SEIU's Chris Coyle says nurses agreed not to strike for a 30-day cooling-off period, but were locked out Monday morning by Universal Health Services. Teamsters president James Hoffa says he'll use the next 5 years to concentrate Teamster efforts on organizing and strengthening contracts that protect pensions, wages, and health benefits. Hoffa says organizing is the key to have the power to be effective across the range of other labor issues.
Organizing and doing things like raising the minimum wage, passing the Employee Free Choice Act, working on national health care, making sure we have port security, making sure people have good, strong pensions. Those are our goals nationally.
Some UPS workers are unhappy with their contracts over pension and health benefits issues. Hoffa says he'll work to strengthen pensions and health care in the new UPS contracts, but he says Teamster pension plans are strong.
That fund, we're very proud of, has paid out over $37 billion since 1955, and there isn't one person that's ever missed a pension check. And what we've got to do is to negotiate, you know, more money into that plan and work on getting a better contract, more security with regard to pensions and health care.
With Walmart employees feeling more and more powerless, the company has adopted a new program to try and win them back. Jesse Russell has more.
In recent months, the world's largest retail company has embarked on a new profit-saving mission, a mission that includes using more part-time workers, capping wages, and stiffer penalties for unpaid days off. The plan has created outrage amongst many employees, and demonstrations have even broken out at some Walmart stores around the country. According to the New York Times, the company has adopted a new program intended to show the employees that the corporation still cares. Managers of the Walmart store will meet with 10 workers each week to hear their concerns. In addition, store managers can extend the 10% employee discount to an additional 10% on a single item in the store during the holiday period. The program also includes a special polo shirt for employees who have been with the company for more than 20 years. Walmart does have other methods for employees to reach out to management, including an anonymous employee complaint line and an internal website where workers can ask questions of executives in the company, including CEO Lee Scott. Here is today's economic report. An erosion in the wage gap between men and women should be a reason to celebrate. So why isn't anyone rejoicing? Turns out that at the same time women saw a slight uptick in wages by 3%, men saw a downtrend with an average male wage dropping by 2%. One reason cited is that there has been an increase in jobs in female-dominated fields, such as the service sector, while high-paying factory and information technology jobs, typically male-dominated, have been on the decline in the United States.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
20 minutes before the hour, head on for a Tuesday night. I'm Bob Kincaid, and you see, that's, if you were listening to the labor radio news there, Workers Independent News Service, fine folks out of Madison, Wisconsin. See, I said it right, Wisconsin. You know, you hear these wage issues. And, of course, we're going to have a, we have been promised that one of the first things we're going to do when the Democrats take over the Congress is, by God, we're going to have a raise in the minimum wage. And dare that jug-eared, pig-eyed little lout to veto it. Because when he vetoes a minimum wage increase, we will see once and for all the true, the true demonic nature of the Bush administration. Because this past Saturday, we reached a shameful historic milestone in which we reached the longest period of the minimum wage in the minimum wage's existence without an increase. And you see, the minimum wage exists because the dirty, rotten, filthy rat bastards who control the money in this country could not see the common sense of paying a decent wage to somebody on an hourly basis, so they had to be compelled by law to pay a certain wage. And it is a minimum wage. It is not a living wage. The easy thing would have been to do the moral thing. But no, every time there's talk of a rise in the minimum wage, you can guarantee, as sure as God made little green apples, and little green apples go through little boys, well, all of that, you can guarantee that the United States Chamber of Commerce will appear at a blue ribbon panel hearing in Congress saying, well, you know, if you raise the minimum wage, we will have a national economic collapse, the likes of which we have never seen before. And the rise in the minimum wage comes along, and the economic collapse doesn't. And in a few years, it's time to raise the minimum wage again, and the same sorry sack of liar from the United States Chamber of Commerce comes back to Capitol Hill and said, if you raise the minimum wage, there will be an economic collapse the likes of which has not before happened in the United States. And nobody ever just grabs him by his lapels and says, you damn liar! We've heard it all before! You have no credibility! You're a liar! You tell lies! Lying is what liars do! Quit lying about the minimum wage! Oh, if you pay working people more, we won't be able to hire anyone, and we'll have to have ghost people make all the products. Jesus. But that's why you wind up with laws. Once you're above the tribal level where you have the occasional miscreant who steals a goat. Jesus, there's that image of Gene Wilder from Everything You Always Wanted to Know About Sex, but or I Am in Love with a Sheep. Movie reference. Once you rise above the tribal stuff, you have to have laws, because generally the people who have money will not treat decently the people who don't have as much money. So let's go to the phones. We're joined by our good friend Sarge, calling from Southern Mississippi. Hey, Sarge, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Man, that was a tough trip to Houston for you guys.
Yeah, well, they were a good ball club.
Yeah.
They're a good ball club, Bob. They got an offense. You just can't stop it. You can't stop it. You know, what? I was looking at the chat room. This is kind of interesting. We got people from Australia, Germany, Japan, and we're all talking about gasoline.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Isn't that so?
Well, it is the, what did the ancient alchemists look for? They were looking for the universal solvent. I think we found it.
I think we have, and it stinks, don't it?
Yep, it does.
It really does. But you was talking about bad food's bad for you. Here in Mississippi, we're lucky. This being the liberal state that it is, we're real conscious about our foods.
Okay, I'm not grinning.
Well, you should be, because I am. But it's, you know, like here in this town, it's around 7,000 people. We've got every conceivable fast food joint that you can possibly think of.
Bet you even got Popeye's fried chicken.
Oh yeah.
See, I'd give any, I mean, that's where I get, you know, I'll give it up and have my trans fats. I need a Popeye's fried chicken in West Virginia. There is not one.
Oh, we got it, and we got Domino's and Burger King and McDonald's and even one that I admit I eat at, the Deck, which is a local thing, and it's you know, bad
yeah.
food. But then we also have the I think we're number one in premature deaths.
And obesity and poor diet.
Yeah, and...
Y'all in Louisiana.
Yeah, I bet your Ray's going to love that one.
Yeah.
But
I just ran on the top of the hour news. I just happened to hear it.
Well, you know, it's true, because here we've got this really screwy idea. Number one, unions are bad because they just steal your money. You pay those union wages, and they just take the money and pocket it, and you don't get nothing out of it, so it's better to have the right to work where you can get your own job and you don't have to negotiate with no union.
You're more free that way, by God.
That's right. And, of course, then you hear these advertisements like Orleans Furniture, a good place to work. The place has so many dang chemicals that if you work there for 2 years, you're guaranteed some kind of bronchial problem.
And of course, if we, you know, and again, you live in a largely deregulated state because, you know, regulation's communism.
Right. Yeah. We can't have that. That's socialism, and you know, those socialism's not good. But it's just the mindset here that just drives you crazy, because you know that so many of them are being deceived and they really don't know any better. Like with me, I can always remember the news being slanted here. Even when I was a little boy, the news was slanted. You know, when Kennedy was killed, I remember how the news handled that, and it left me kind of astounded, because they really didn't have much compassion for Mr. Kennedy. And then Martin Luther King, oh, good gracious, I can't begin to tell you what was said when he got killed. So it just... you know, it's the mindset that's...
Yeah, but some of it's changing, Sarge, and two things give me hope. The victory that was had by the workers at the Smithfield Kill Plant in Tar Heel, North Carolina, it's not a complete victory, but it was a significant one, and the victory of the SEIU workers, the janitors in Houston.
Well, I tell you what is making a difference at Walmart, believe it or not. Walmart is kind of backing down a little bit, because... they have kind of slacked off on some of their stuff a little bit.
Well, the top of the hour news story there. By God, if you've been there 20 years, you get a polo shirt.
Yeah, my
that's worth 20 years of my life. I don't know about you, Sarge.
Well, my twin sister works for Walmart, and she's been there for 7, going on 8 years now. And until Katrina came, she got transferred to California because she lost everything. And she went out to California, where her oldest daughter lives. And when she transferred back, she got all the pay raises that she was supposed to have gotten before Katrina. And she, before Katrina, she was making $6 an hour. That was prior to Katrina. And then when she went to California, she got raised to what she was supposed to get. Now, this isn't outstanding either, but it was $11 an hour. For 7 years.
Jesus.
I mean, now tell me.
Well, that gives me a pretty daggum good idea where she started.
Oh, yeah.
If it takes you 7 years to climb to $11 an hour. If she climbs much higher, and I don't mean to be overly negative, Sarge, but it's a proven fact within the Walmart business model, if she climbs much higher in salary, they will do anything they can do to fire her.
Well, they already have been doing stuff like that. They held back her raises and didn't even tell her that she was up for them, and she'd get them, and they wouldn't give it to her. they had her in charge of an area, and when she wouldn't go full time, go into management rather, then they moved her out of that position. So I mean, that's the way they work. They want to get you on salary if you're good enough to make it in their book. Of course, I good enough to make it. You don't ask questions and you do what you're told, boy.
Yeah.
And I mean,
because if you don't, you will not be able to eat at Popeyes anymore.
No, you won't even be able to eat at the food shelter because they closed it down too. Like we had these Meals on Wheels. You don't get them around here anymore because they're gone.
Yeah.
They had to shut it down, and there's elderly that used to live on those things. That was the only food they got, and now a lot of them are just going without food, and I'm sure they're dying, you know, because they can't cook for themselves. They can't do anything unless they have family.
Little Frisky's a la King for dinner.
Yeah, and, well, you can't even do that because the food stamps won't buy dog food anymore.
Well, that's true, too.
Because, I remember when that came up, they got all upset about it. And what the legislature here, I don't know what it did in other places, but here in Mississippi, what they did, they turned around and said, well, we can't have our seniors eating dog food. Doggone it, we're going to stop that. So they made it where you couldn't get dog food on food stamps. Now, they didn't raise their...
Oh, no, no,
no. Uh-uh, no, can't have that. But they did take the dog food away from them. And, of course, all of these were the Christian Southern Baptists.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember it. That's where I first heard the story about the meeting, the dog food, was because of the preacher in the Southern Baptist Church talking about it. And what a shame it was that our seniors were eating dog food, and we had to get that changed, and they did. I don't get it. I don't get it, Bob. I just, it's this mindset. Of course, now what they like to do is they see one thing, everybody becomes that one thing that they don't like homeless. Oh, well, I saw a homeless person out there begging for money and went and bought a pint of booze. So all of them are drinkers now. That's all they want.
Oh, I know. You know, the guys standing there panhandling money, and somebody will reach, I've seen it happen, reach into their pocket and say, you going to buy liquor with this?
Yeah.
No, ma'am. You know, and the guy smells like a brewery. But you know what? I don't care.
Yeah,
if you're going to buy, you know what? Go buy it. If it eases the pain of a miserable existence, then you know if I can subsidize a couple of hours of no pain, I figure I've done a good thing.
Yeah. Like in my medicine, my insurance says I can have two name brand drugs and three generics. Regardless of what else I need, that's all I can have, you know. I can prescribe seven different drugs, I could still only get five, and only two of them can be name brand. And for my conditions, I'm supposed to get three brand names. Well, I can't, and they won't make any exceptions for it.
No.
So I have to go without one of my prescriptions.
Well, see, at one point in time, Sarge, we had a pretty decent workers' compensation system here in West Virginia because it had been because its cruelties had been modified by some humane and decent Supreme Court judges. And any time you talk to a conservative and the words workers' comp came up, they'd say, well, you know what, I know a bunch of people in workers' comp, and you know what, they can work. I seen them mowing their grass.
Uh-huh. Yep, they do that here too. Even like my neighbor, my two dogs got in a fight, and I was trying to separate. And I can pick something up, but it's gonna hurt like I'll get out when I do. And I had to pick one of my dogs up and throw him across the yard a little bit to get him away from the other, so I could get in between them. And she saw me throw my dogs, and she said, "Well, you don't look like you got any problems to me." What she didn't know was, after I did that, when I got inside, I had to go lay down, and I didn't get up 3 days.
Yeah.
That didn't matter, you know. That didn't matter. That was beside the point. So.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, Bob, I'm going to let you go. Appreciate the time. And,
thank you, Sarge.
Thank
good
you
to hear from you.
Too.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that's it. Many thanks to our new friend, Charlie Sullivan. Maybe you'll get to hear from him a little more often. I think that'll be kind of neat, don't you? And, of course, many thanks to you yourself. I do appreciate the time you choose to spend with us. What I told Charlie is true. We end the broadcast day and we kind of look at each other and go, do you believe what we have here? Because it's humbling, I tell you, it is humbling. And we are honored. And many thanks, of course, to my darling, lovely, talented wife, Agnes, for producing the program this evening and taking your phone calls. Thanks to John Fox in Sydney, Australia, who engineers the program. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the streams, the archives, and the podcasts of all Head On Radio Network programs, and he is the hardest working man in liberal talk. You got to do the right thing by him, though, because he won't send you a bill. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computer Services in Tallahassee, Florida, is our IT professional. Makes everything work. You know, when he says jump, the electrons scream. We have wonderful mods in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. If you've never been by, pop by some evening. I think you'll find it a welcoming place. And, you know, if you've got something you want to make a little bit more permanent, feel free to go by and use the message boards at HeadOnRadio.com. At the main network page, there's a link to them, or you can go straight there, HeadOnRadio.com. It's free. You'll enjoy it. No pop-ups. And, of course, everything that happens on the Horn happens because there are many thousand members of the Mid-Atlantic Regional Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, and they get up every day and they go out and they build the American dream. These are some exceptional men and women. And by supporting this network, they're trying to save the American dream. And I think they're succeeding. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you. Just fast.
the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
View of the panel's recommendations on how to change the strategy in Iraq. The president had lunch with former Secretary of State James Baker, who headed the 10-member group. On Capitol Hill today, Robert Gates, the defense secretary nominee, began his Senate confirmation hearing. He admitted that the United States is not winning the Iraq war. Gates added that if the situation in Iraq is not stabilized within the next 2 years, it could lead to a regional conflict. The full Senate vote on his confirmation could take place by the end of the week or as early as Wednesday or Thursday. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki is now in favor of a regional conference on how to end the sectarian violence in his country. He previously opposed the idea because he didn't want neighboring countries to have a hand in Iraqi affairs. More than 40 Iraqis were killed in violence today that included shootings and several car bombings. One U.S. soldier was also killed today on patrol in Baghdad. In southern Iraq, an American soldier died in a vehicle accident. Hackers have reportedly attacked the Naval War College's computer network in Rhode Island. Investigators are trying to find who is responsible as they assess the extent of the cyber break-in. In Fiji, the military took control of the country. It is the fourth military coup in less than 2 decades. The country's Prime Minister is under house arrest and his home is surrounded by troops. Access to the popular video sharing website YouTube.com has been blocked in Iran because of laws of the Islamic Republic. According to the group Reporters Without Borders, Iran has also blocked its citizens from having access to the New York Times webpage and the online encyclopedia Wikipedia. In the rugged, snow-covered Oregon Coast Range, rescuers are searching for a 35-year-old California man who has been missing for more than a week. His wife and 2 young children were rescued yesterday and are in good health. He separated from them in order to get help after their car crashed on a remote road on their way to